You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Retirees older than 65 got hit with a 24% hike in their monthly out-of-pocket health insurance premium payments in 2004. That's according to a new report from the Kaiser Family Foundation. Michelle Kitchman is a senior policy analyst with Kaiser.
Many of these changes involve increasing retiree contributions to premiums, increasing retiree co-insurance or co-payments. That's what they pay for their health care services. The good news is that we did find that few employers said that they were terminating subsidized health benefits for current retirees.
Most employers surveyed said they plan to continue prescription drug benefits for retirees after the Medicare drug benefit starts in 2006. Kitchman says since 1988, the percentage of employers offering health insurance to retirees has dropped sharply.
We have seen a decline in the share of employers that are actually offering these benefits to retirees. The decline went from 66% of employers offering such benefits in 1988 to about 36% in 2004.
On average, retirees younger than 65 pay $187 toward their monthly insurance premiums. Retirees older than 65 pay an average of $101 per month. Kitchman says the Kaiser Foundation report shows current retirees are likely to hang on to their health insurance, but younger workers face retirement without that benefit.
The more daunting news is that some employers gave us indication that they intend to terminate benefits for future retirees. So that is, current workers today may be less assured of receiving retiree health benefits when they retire.
800 workers at a meatpacking plant in Colorado are being laid off today. The workers at the Swift & Company plant in Greeley, Colorado, are losing their jobs 11 days before a contract with ConAgra Foods expires. The plant is the largest provider of jobs in Greeley, which is located in the already struggling Weld County. Even before the layoffs were announced, United Way reported that it receives about 50 calls a day from people seeking assistance, and the county food bank can barely keep up with the demand. The plant says that some workers could be rehired within 18 months as it begins to produce new meat products.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Poverty in rural America continues to be higher than in urban areas. In 2003, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, 14.2% of people living in rural America were poor. The urban poverty percentage is 12.1%. Since poverty statistics began to be collected in the 1960s, people living in rural areas have always suffered higher poverty rates than those in our cities. During the 90s, though, poverty in the countryside declined, hitting a record low of 13.4% in 2000. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
One of the greatest music joints in my town of Austin, Texas, was Liberty Lunch, which regularly featured up-and-coming local musicians as well as such national talents as Taj Mahal. This bar, cafe, and music yard was inexpensive, adventuresome, laid-back, unique, and, well, it was Austin. I say was because it's gone. A few years ago, our mayor gave taxpayer subsidies to lure something called CSC Corporation to town, giving it the spot of city-owned land that Liberty Lunch had rented for years. So now, we have a cold six-story building housing a high-tech military contractor that has no roots in Austin, is not in character with our city, and offers nothing to our way of life. What we do not have are the good eats, good sounds, and good spirit that emanated every night from that spot, drawing thousands of enthusiastic customers and helping define Austin for people everywhere. Austin is hardly alone in suffering a steady erosion of our homegrown businesses to impersonal corporate giants, big box stores, and cookie-cutter chains. It's probably happening where you live, too. No one voted for this, but these giants get public subsidies, wield massive advertising budgets, and have deep pocket financing and the political clout to bully their way in, remaking our communities in their own bland, self-serving image. But you and I don't have to support them. Let's assert our own grassroots buying power to proclaim a new economic independence. A group called AMIBA, American Independent Business Alliance, has organized the Indy Challenge, urging we the people to rediscover the local businesses that make our town special, from coffee shops to restaurants, bookstores to hardware stores, pharmacies to farmers markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, we have the power. Ask your friends, families, clubs, churches, unions, and local governments to join you in using their dollars for community self-determination. For help, call AMIBA, 406-582-1255.
As As a small business owner, you turn multitasking into a fine art, because for you, doing several things all at the same time is just another day at the office. So Sam's Club offers the option of doing two things at once: buying items you need for your business, while at the same time buying items you need for your home. This holiday season, jewelry's best kept secret is revealed. Discover fine quality diamonds at Sam's Club. Whether you're shopping for home or business, count on us to help you get it done. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
One in four adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Happy Friday. TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, whatever's appropriate. Today is now is the first hour of our Friday program, which every week means it's time for Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders will be with us for the next hour. First, I just wanted to make a very short announcement. There's a movement forming in the United States for people to show up for George Bush's inaugural. And because they so carefully vet all these things and don't let folks in without, if anybody has the equivalent of a carry button on, they turn them away, as you know. These folks are getting haircuts and putting on ties, and they're going to show up, and then they're going to turn their back on Bush as he drives by. Simple, clear, and coherent message. Turn your back on Bush.org is the website. So I just wanted to point that out, and we'll start. And we'll move on from there. So anyhow, it's time for Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders in 1991 became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years to the U.S. House of Representatives. He's since been reelected 7 times, the longest serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you. I know that there's a couple of things that you wanted to talk about, Bernie, and we also have already a caller who's on hold. Shall we go to the call first?
No, why don't we let's raise a few issues, and okay. I'm sure we'll get plenty of calls.
All right.
The first point that I want to make today is what we're beginning to see is a full-throttle effort on the part of the Bush administration to sell the privatization of Social Security, which I think will be a disaster for this country.
Well, their ultimate agenda is to roll back the New Deal and eliminate Social Security, replace it with a totally private program.
Absolutely. And I think the first point that has to be made is that when listeners watch the TV, and you're going to see more and more of this, you'll see the president, you'll see the Secretary of the Treasury, you'll see various advisory commissions get up there, and they will say, as the president did just this week, Social Security is in crisis. Well, my friends, the first point to be made is that Social Security is not in crisis. Are there very long-term problems that have to be addressed? Yes, there are. But according to the Congressional Budget Office, which is a nonpartisan, widely respected organization, Social Security has enough money to pay out every benefit owed to every eligible American until the year 2052. For the next 48 years. Every American would get every nickel that he or she was owed. That, my friends, is not a crisis. So the first point that has to be asked is, why are they raising this to a crisis level when there is not a crisis? There is a crisis in terms of our trade deficit and the loss of millions of jobs. There's certainly a crisis in terms of the disintegration of our healthcare system, the high cost of prescription drugs that we pay, the fact that the middle class is shrinking, that we have a record-breaking deficit and trade deficit. There are, in fact, Tom, as you know, a lot of crises out there. Social Security happens not to be one of them. And we have got to fight back against the privatization of Social Security, or once again, we'll return to the 1920s and see the elderly people in our country being the poorest, most insecure financially of any of our people, and that would be a real horror.
But Bernie, from the point of view of people who make their living on Wall Street, there are trillions of dollars, literally trillions of dollars, that the government is handling in this very boring fashion. We have these government bureaucrats who are paid boring civil service salaries and do this boring job of just boringly, carefully administering Social Security and only charging 1%. I mean, the total cost of security, Social Security administration, only 1%. And geez, it could be so sexy and jazzy if Wall Street got a hold of that, they could charge 4-5% like they do in the UK when they privatize part of Social Security. They could make billions of dollars of profit off this. I mean, this really is a crisis for those people who give big chunks of money to the Bush administration.
I mean, this is absolutely consistent with the Bush administration's approach on virtually every issue that we face. In terms of health care, for example, the question, which is a difficult question, how do we provide...
to make billions of dollars of profit off this. I mean, this really is a crisis for those people who give big chunks of money to the Bush administration.
I mean, this is absolutely consistent with the Bush administration's approach on virtually every issue that we face. In terms of health care, for example, the question, which is a difficult question, how do we provide health care to every American in the most cost-effective way? That's the challenge. Yeah. People may have different opinions. For the Bush people, the question is, how do we make as much money as we can for the insurance companies and for the drug companies out of people's sickness?
Yeah,
that's
their
question.
And for the family of Bill Frist and his buddies.
Right. And on it goes.
Privatizing
exactly
the hospitals,
right.
Yeah.
And in terms of Social Security, the issue that we're talking about here is how do we make sure that when everybody reaches retirement age, when people are disabled, people get hurt on the job, when a mother of two kids loses her husband, how do we make sure that those folks have enough money to live in dignity? Not, as you suggest,
Human Services, the HHS, the headline today in the Wall Street Journal, Leavitt is veteran of Medicaid overhaul. This is the guy who's going to be running our Medicare program. When he ran the state of Utah's Medicaid program, the equivalent within that state, he eliminated a separate state medical assistance program for 3,500 people. About 17,600 Medicaid recipients saw higher co-payments for doctor visits, new limits on mental health and substance abuse services, and no coverage for non-emergency transportation. We'll get back to Mike Leavitt. We've got Bernie back on the line. No, we don't. No Bernie there. Hey, Ira, you got to bring him up again. I don't know what's going on. I'll tell you what it is. Mercury is retrograde. This is what my old publisher, Tim, who won't answer the phone. Okay, Mike Leavitt. Critics say the coverage the new Utah program offers the formerly uninsured is so basic as to be inadequate. It doesn't, for example, include hospitals or specialist care. This is the program that Mike Leavitt put into place when he was governor of Utah. We've got Bernie back on? Okay, we'll try Bernie one more time. You there, Bernie?
Yep, I'm right here.
Okay, I don't know what happened there. Just, boom, vanished. But we've got you back. And you were saying everything's fine with Social Security, and these guys are creating a phony crisis.
Yeah, I mean, in so many words.
Yeah, the bottom line there. And I started on a rant about Mike Leavitt, but we can get back to that a little later. I'm just waiting for Ira to get you back on the line here.
And the bottom line here is we take it for granted.
Yeah.
But Social Security has paid out every benefit owed to every eligible American for the last 70 or so years, when the stock market was up, when the stock market was down, when there was recession, when there was boom. People had the guaranteed security of knowing that they would get a check. And believe me, that is not, in these difficult days, not an insignificant feature.
Yeah. How do we prevent the right wing from corrupting and privatizing Social Security, Bernie?
Well, I tell you, it's the same old story. It's whether it's health care or Social Security. Tom, and this is my mantra, I know I'm going to bore the listeners, but we have got to recognize that the folks we're up against see politics as a 365-day-a-year venture. We have got to organize and educate and educate and organize and knock on doors and hold meetings and register voters and just develop a very, very strong grassroots effort. In this case, working not only with senior groups, with unions, but with young people. I was at a college not so long ago speaking to a classroom full of college students. I asked them how many of them thought Social Security was going bankrupt. Every person in the room raised their hand. Why? Because that's what they see on television.
Yeah.
And so we're going to need a lot of work. But I urge listeners to understand that politics is not just 2 weeks before an election.
Yeah. And what's amazing, Bernie, go to websites like theyrule.net, and you look at boards of directors, and you discover that the big Wall Street banking firms that will make billions, literally billions with a B, hundreds of billions of profit in handling privatized Social Security accounts, have interlocking boards with corporations that own CBS, NBC, ABC, New York Times. It's mind-boggling.
Which gets us back to the whole issue of media. Again, I'm seeing it. I'm sure everybody else is. You turn on TV, flip around, and there's one or another spokesperson from the administration, from someplace else, talking about all of the advantages. And believe me, they're going to have Frank Luntz and others framing these issues in a way that sounds quite reasonable. Don't you want a choice? What's wrong with the choice?
Yeah, right. Well, except that you already have a choice. You've got 401Ks, you've got SEPs, you've got IRAs, you've got savings
well,
accounts.
That takes more than a four-second soundbite, doesn't it?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Let's go to the phone calls here, if that's all right with you now.
Sure.
1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Doris in Dublin, New Hampshire, on the line. Hey, Doris, welcome to the program. You're live with Congressman Sanders. I guess Doris.
Hello?
Hey, Doris? Yes.
Yes.
You're live.
Hello?
Hello, Doris. Listen to the telephone, not the radio. You're live on the air with Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
I'm just fine, thank you.
Good. Did you have a question?
Pretty much recovered from my ordeal.
Is this Granny D?
Yes, this is Granny D.
Oh my goodness! It's Doris Haddock, Granny D, who walked across the United States for campaign finance reform and who ran for the United States Senate from New Hampshire recently.
Yes, right.
It's so great to hear from you, Doris.
Thank you. I have a group coming in tonight, and I need to have a listing of important books that they should be studying that are new ones out about the corporations.
Yeah.
And I need a listing.
Oh, boy. Well,
maybe Tom can email you
sometime today?
Yeah, I will do that. I will do that as soon as we get off the air, Doris, or I'll call you back.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Yep. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Gene in Hillsboro, Oregon, is on the line. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Congressman Sanders.
Hi.
I got a question for you. I just got my Social Security awards letter for next year.
Yep.
And under the Medicare information, there's something here I don't understand. It says, your state may help pay with Medicare expenses through a Medicare savings program if, and I'm going to go down to the third bullet point here, the things you own, but not your home or one car, are worth no more than $4,000 for an individual. $6,000 if you're a couple, but what I want to know is, I obviously don't have, I've got a 10-year-old TV and that kind of thing, so I'm not really worried about that. But on my durable medical good, like a wheelchair, say I get a new wheelchair, does that mean that they won't help me the rest of the year if I get sick and need a flu shot? Or, well, they don't do that now, but you know what I'm saying?
I tell you what, that is, we have four people in my office who deal with these issues every single day. Sometimes these eligibility rules are fairly complex. If Tom has your number, Tom, you have this gentleman's number?
I don't, but we can put him on hold and Ira can get it.
We'll call you up after the show. How's that?
All right, then. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're very welcome.
Very well done. Okay. Gene in Hillsboro, Oregon, thank you very much. He may also want to contact his congressman in Oregon as well.
Right.
Yeah,
okay. All right, I'm going to put you on hold, Gene, and Ira will take your information. Line one there. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. Brunch with Bernie, 1-866-889-8894.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This year, give a Christmas gift of inner peace, mental health, and transformation in the form of a fun, beautiful game you play with your body and brain based on meditation, breathing, and biofeedback. Go to opednews.com to click on the Wild Divine banner to order the game that Yoga Journal says turns the quest for calm into entertainment. In most games, you find weapons. With Wild Divine, you connect your computer to your body and play the game with your mind, heart, and breath. So you find new abilities and awareness truly within yourself that you use to win the game and then apply in your real life. PC Magazine says Wild Divine is innovative and fun, and even better, it's very effective. And they give it 5 stars. It's shipped with both Windows and Mac software.
The Wild Divine game is a great Christmas gift that will make a real difference in a person's life. Go to opednews.com now and click on the Wild Divine banner to order it in time for Christmas. That's opednews.com. If you sell a product or service, we have listeners from coast to coast and in 97 countries who want to know about you. Reach out to our national audience with our small business advertising package. You'll pay just a fraction of what national advertising usually costs. Call now at 802-229-2288 or visit our website, tomhartman.com, and follow the links to the small business advertising package for more information. Don't miss reaching a national audience now. 802-229-2288. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a 4-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Christmas jams at the tunnel, shop through hustle and bustle. Snow and lights make wonderland out this concrete jungle. There's miracles on 34th Street.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the Brunch with Bernie segment of our program, our regular Friday feature. Our first hour of our program, Congressman Bernie Sanders is with us, America's independent congressman. You're the only independent member of the House of Representatives right now, aren't you, Bernie?
Yes, that's correct. Yep.
And have been for quite some time now.
14 years, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. Jerry in North Carolina is on the line. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Thank you, and good afternoon to both of you.
Hello.
Good afternoon, Jerry.
I've got something I'd like to hear you comment on, and when I tell you this, you may think I'm some kind of wacko, but in talking about Social Security, I'd like to see Democrats and independents do something that would sort of slap the face of the Republicans and get their attention and make them start working towards being fair and equitable. And what my proposal would be is to get some of the well-heeled Democrats together, like Soros and Corzine and their ilk, and let's put together a hostile takeover of Diebold Incorporated.
Diebold, yeah. the voting machine company, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, that would wake people up, I should think.
That would get the attention of a lot of them.
All right, but I think, you know, Jerry is raising again the issue that a lot of people have a lot of concern about, and that is making sure that when we cast the vote in America, that vote counts and that vote is there for a recount, not disappearing into cyberspace through touchscreen machines. And we've discussed this many times, and I think Tom and I both very, very, very strongly agree with you. And not only that, we need major campaign reform, not only the campaign finance reform. In America, it is absurd that people are waiting hours to cast the vote, and it is absurd that people don't have the knowledge and the security that their vote has actually counted. So that's one of the many issues that has got to be addressed.
Yeah, you know, Bernie, I just very quickly, there are some just amazing statistical analyses coming out of the Ohio, Florida, and New Mexico races showing in heavy Democratic counties or precincts that there were turnouts as low as 20% in some places. In heavy Republican precincts that there were turnouts over 100% in some places. It's looking increasingly like, and this is me saying this, I know that you're not, as a congressman, you can't take a position on this, but or whatever, but this sure looks to me like there's serious vote fraud happened in this last election, and it's increasingly... becoming apparent. Just the study I got this morning on New Mexico was just enough to curl your hair. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, I would love to see
yeah.
it.
Anyhow, let's go to Ken in Pennsylvania. Ken, you're on the air with Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Congressman, thank you for being there. I want to know, where's the outrage? I mean, this administration is just ramroading these issues down our throats. When I think I've heard you guys talk about a very simple fix would be just to raise the limit on Social Security from the $88,000 a year to $160,000. And even if we don't match that with the employers, because I know that big business or even small business would be maybe adverse to that, but let me pay more to protect me in the future. Isn't that a simple fix?
That is one of the very simple fixes. You're absolutely right. And that is something that we are talking about as one of the important components of any real healthcare reform, Social Security reform. Interestingly enough, there are Republicans who are talking about it, a few of them. The problem here, of course, is the same old story, is the wealthiest people in this country are going to be vigorously opposing it. The Bush administration works hand in glove with the wealthy and large corporations. But certainly one of the fixes for Social Security is to do what we did with Medicare, and as you just indicated, lift that ceiling. Right now, Bill Gates contributes the same amount of money into Social Security as somebody who makes $89,000 a year. You take that off, as we did in Medicare, you will add many, many years onto the life of Social Security. That's a very important part of any serious reform.
You'll add decades, maybe
yes.
centuries
yep.
to it. I mean, it just solves the problem, or a good chunk of it. Excellent question, Ken. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. It's Tom Hartman here with you. It's the Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Here on the Tom Hartman program, your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live? And who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Retirees older than 65 got hit with a 24% hike in their monthly out-of-pocket health insurance premium payments in 2004. That's according to a new report from the Kaiser Family Foundation. Michelle Kitchman is a senior policy analyst with Kaiser.
Many of these changes involve increasing retiree contributions to premiums, increasing retiree co-insurance or co-payments. That's what they pay for their health care services. The good news is that we did find that few employers said that they were terminating subsidized health benefits for current retirees.
Most employers surveyed said they plan to continue prescription drug benefits for retirees after the Medicare drug benefit starts in 2006. Kitchman says since 1988, the percentage of employers offering health insurance to retirees has dropped sharply.
We have seen a decline in the share of employers that are actually offering these benefits to retirees. The decline went from 66% of employers offering such benefits in 1988 to about 36% in 2004.
On average, retirees younger than 65 pay $187 toward their monthly insurance premiums. Retirees older than 65 pay an average of $101 per month. Kitchman says the Kaiser Foundation report shows current retirees are likely to hang on to their health insurance, but younger workers face retirement without that benefit.
The more daunting news is that some employers gave us indication that they intend to terminate benefits for future retirees. So that is current workers today may be less assured of receiving retiree health benefits when they retire.
800 workers at a meatpacking plant in Colorado are being laid off today. The workers at the Swift & Company plant in Greeley, Colorado, are losing their jobs 11 days before a contract with ConAgra Foods expires. The plant is the largest provider of jobs in Greeley, which is located in the already struggling Weld County. Even before the layoffs were announced, United Way reported that it receives about 50 calls a day from people seeking assistance, and the county food bank can barely keep up with the demand. The plant says that some workers could be rehired within 18 months as it begins to produce new meat products.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Poverty in rural America continues to be higher than in urban areas. In 2003, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, 14.2% of people living in rural America were poor. The urban poverty percentage is 12.1. Since poverty statistics began to be collected in the 1960s, people living in rural areas have always suffered higher poverty rates than those in our cities. During the 90s, though, poverty in the countryside declined, hitting a record low of 13.4% in 2000.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
All the lights are coming on now. How I wish that it would snow now. I would feel like going home now.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Martha in Massachusetts is on the line. Hey, Martha, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Whoop, whoop, fine, except I just...
Hi, Martha, how are you doing?
I think we just...
Hi, Congressman Sanders. I had a question for you. In regard to privatizing the Social Security, we all know that that's not really going to be a good thing. But also, the last spending bill that I saw on the Internet from C-SPAN indicated that he also wants to cut housing for the elderly and disabled. So, I mean, this all kind of looks like it's being targeted at elderly and disabled people, and I was just wondering, what does he want to do, just euthanize them all?
Well, no, I don't think it's going to euthanize them all, but I do think there is no question. And I have to say, you know, Martha, this is part of a long-term plan that these guys have. What you do is you give hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the richest 1%, to millionaires and billionaires. You run up a huge deficit. Then you go before the American people who are concerned about the deficit and a $7 trillion national debt, and you say, you know what, we have to deal with this national debt. So what are we going to do? Well, obviously, we're going to cut back on Medicaid. We're going to cut back on housing. We're going to privatize Social Security. Those are the things that we have to do. I am very worried. Housing is a huge problem in this country. There are millions of people who just cannot afford to find decent housing, especially if they have kids. There are senior citizens, as you indicated, who are living alone in inadequate housing, having a hard time in the Northeast, the northern part of the country, heating their homes. There are people, older people, who are absolutely dependent upon Medicaid for their prescription drugs. And Bush, who thinks it's fine to give tax breaks for billionaires, in my view, will be cutting back unless we stop him on Medicaid, on affordable housing. It is a terribly important issue, and a lot of people, as you indicate, Martha, are going to be really, really hurting if we don't stop them.
Okay, now how do we get past seeing everything is controlled by the Republicans? How do we get past them?
Well, I think we've got to go out, we've got to educate people, we've got to organize people. Most people do not think you should give tax breaks to billionaires and cut back on the weakest and most vulnerable people in this country. And we've got to reach out all across this country to know, to let any member of Congress, any United States senator who supports these propositions know that this will be his or her last term in office.
Yeah, well said. Martha, thank you for that call. You know, the strategy, Bernie, has a name. Grover Norquist came up with it. It's called Starve the Beast Strategy, the beast being the government. And if they figured if they could run up huge enough deficits that the government would be so starved of funds that it would start cannibalizing programs for the poor and the middle class. And sure enough, here we are.
And this is going to lead us down the line, in my view, where we become a nation, and I'm not talking about tomorrow, 20 years, 30 years, that looks like some of these Latin American countries where you have a few people at the top who are incredibly wealthy, you have a very small middle class, and you have a massive amount of poverty and desperation. That's the direction that we are going. And by the way, on a related issue, while we in this country are moving to a decline in the middle class, many of these large corporations are bailing out in America. They're moving to China as fast as they possibly can. You know, that's where they're going to be. They're going to be Chinese corporations. And if we don't stop this, you're going to see China in 50 years, 30 years, being the most powerful country economically on earth, and the United States looking like a Latin American banana republic.
Yeah, it's the new oligarchs.
That's exactly what it is.
Kodak in Durham, North Carolina on the line. Hey, Kodak, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you, I'm Tom and Bernie. Howard Beale, I'm mad as heck, and I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm tired of these candy pants representative of ours rolling over on every single issue. These cabinet and judicial nominees, they say, well, they're going to, you know, there's nothing we can do to keep them from being appointed. And it can't, in the case of the new head of the National Security Agency, he had all kind of problems. And even before the process began, we heard language about people, you know, we can't stop this. We need to start using the L word. And I'm not talking about for liberal. I'm talking about lie, as in this new Social Security plan. It's a lie.
That's
and
right.
And
no,
it needs to give the people something to talk about. And
well,
it's
we have
brought
to...
out.
You're quite right. I mean, we went through this through the war in Iraq. We went through this through the... Remember, if we gave tax breaks to billionaires, we were going to create all these good jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen. We went to war in Iraq because there were weapons of mass destruction. Wasn't true. We have to privatize Social Security because there's a crisis. Well, you know what? There is no crisis. Social Security can pay every benefit for the next 48 years.
Yeah. Kodak and Bernie, Bernie, in saluting your policy of we need to get active, and Kodak, you raised it. Here is Howard Beale.
You've got to say, I'm a human being.
Right.
My life has value.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
That we had in mind, Kodak?
Yes, but I do have one specific question for
him. Well, I wish Howard could have continued that speech and then talked about organizing people, because it's great to stick your head out the window, but you're going to have to take it a step further to put that anger into a political effort.
Yeah.
Here's a point that Tom was making in his neuro-linguistic program, is that we need to be able to put our message and one concise point, and we can use the L word for everything, because I've listened on the radio programs here talking about the privatization of the Social Security. And even our people on our side are saying, yes, there are some problems. No, don't say there is a problem. Tell them that the only thing it needs to do is increase the level on which...
It needs to be tweaked. It needs to be tweaked. It needs some recalibration.
That's the whole question. We have talked about it a million times, is how you frame the issue.
Right.
Yeah.
And we don't do a particularly good job, and Kodak is right about
it. I'm going to get this quick question in here. You remember in the last spending bill, there was that provision that you all had to come back and vote out regarding Senate representatives to be able to look at IRS's? I didn't hear anything about this, but do you think that's related to the point that the new rules are going to allow private companies to go out and collect the debt that is owed to the IRS, and this was just somebody trying to get a heads up on forming that type of company?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
On this instance, I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, Kodak raises a good point. I don't think so. I think the problem here is the way the Republicans do business is they combine many different appropriations bills into one. They write these things at 4 o'clock in the morning. Nobody knows what's going on, and stupid mistakes are made. I think this was probably just a mistake.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot, Kodak, for the call. Always great to hear from you, and do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Yeah, first of all, happy holidays, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Say, Tom, what was the name of that actor in that network movie? I forgot.
I've forgotten, too. I'll
look it up. Anyway,
he's now deceased.
I wanted to ask the both of you if I could change the subject a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
This would be something a little more easy to deal with. Perhaps, Bernie, as you know, there's been a lot of Republicans like Chuck Hagel, John McCain, Trent Lott, and Phil Kristol complaining about Mr. Rumsfeld. Is that pretty much a harbinger of the fact that he's going to be gone pretty soon, do you think?
I would hope so.
I
think the idea that we are taking 55-year-old grandfathers from the National Guard and sending them into Iraq, and in some cases they don't have the body armor or the Humvee armor that they need, indicates that this entire effort was misplanned, that Rumsfeld did not have a clue, in fact, what would be happening, and I think that he should be asked to resign. Absolutely.
It was interesting, too, when this story first popped up, you know, Matt Drudge had to get into it, and Fox News, and I haven't heard some of the other radio talk show hosts, but they had to spin it as if some reporter forced this poor soldier to ask this question. He was duped.
Right.
And yet we can see how all the other people there cheered, and now, of course, we see all these Republicans complaining about Mr. Rumsfeld, and the president himself says, hey, if I was over there, I'd be asking that question. So, you know, it's not a panacea, obviously, because...
Yeah.
They might nominate
somebody. No, it's not a panacea. You're right.
But the other question, Bernie, and that Rick raises is if the Bucks. I thought the buck stopped with George W. Bush,
right?
Not Don Rumsfeld.
I mean, that's the point. What you don't want to do is to simply change, you know, the chairs on the Titanic here. We want to get it to the root of what is going on in Iraq, how we bring stability to that country, and how we bring our troops home as soon as possible. I don't want to see Rumsfeld gone, somebody else coming in, continuing the same policy. That won't do us any good.
Yeah, and we need to be holding George W. Bush accountable for this.
Right, exactly. No, this is his war.
Yeah. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Lee in Illinois on the line.
Yes, sir. Good morning, gentlemen. I would like to make a comment on the other subject, Social Security. You guys were going on and talking about, you know, the privatization, but I'm getting close to that age of retirement. I'm almost 59, and I find out that there are several systems, especially in Illinois, teachers' retirement system, the General Assembly retirement system, and the state university retirement system, that none of these people pay into Social Security. I can't get any politician in this area to make a comment about it. And if Social Security is so necessary, why are there... You know, why are they not required to pay into it? And second of all, if a person, excuse me, I'm a little nervous, at my age group, if they would have put their money into one of these systems, their pension would have been roughly at least twice of what they got out of Social Security. So you understand why I'm asking a question like this?
Sure.
Why are they not required to pay into it?
Well, let me tell you something. That is a good question. And that is something that is being debated about the need to make Social Security universal, covering all people. Second of all, Lee, when you say that if people had been in that system or had invested privately, they would have ended up with more money The answer is maybe yes, maybe no.
Well, excuse me, Congressman, let me make a comment. I had worked in an industry around here, and I was lucky enough I was could draw retirement. It was roughly a little over $900. If I had spent, and when I get Social Security age, it'll be roughly around $1,200. Now, if the money I had put in for me or put in some extra, especially in the teacher's retirement system, according to their rules, time in, I would have had a pension roughly to $3,100 a month. Now, not having to work anymore till I'm 62, there would have been no earnings requirement on that. And second of all, I could have, you know, I wouldn't have to wait.
If I may interject something
Yes.
here, Lee, I think that what you're missing is that Social Security is not a retirement system. It's an insurance system.
I've heard this before from my congressman, and you're absolutely
and
wrong.
There's a lot of people. There are 10-year-old kids who are getting Social Security.
I understand
Lee.
That, but in person in my age, because when you retire from whatever industry, and I give you an example, people in Caterpillar, when they retire, they can retire at 30 and out, and they get what they would have got from Social Security plus that. Once they get Social Security age, that amount that the company was paying into them is replaced with Social Security. So don't say it's not a retirement, because it is. You count on that much coming in when you're Social Security age and plus what you get from your retirement.
Can I jump in for a second, Lee?
Sure.
I mean, you raise a good point, and it's a point that a lot of people make. And I think the answer is obviously it depends. If you invest in the stock market, for example,
mm-hmm.
during the 1990s, you know what?
Yes.
You did very, very well.
Yes.
And you're right. But, Lee, I want you to tell me about the guy who invested in the year 2000. How did he do?
Well, a lot of it would depend on how old he was.
A lot of people lost their
money.
Shirts,
I had enough
is what happened.
To put into it. Now, what I'm getting at, I could see where it went down, yes.
Went down big time. Lee, let me just ask you. Here's the point, Lee. The point is that if you invest in the stock market, you certainly can make money, and millions do. If you invest in certain stocks and in the stock market, if you invest in high-tech stuff in the year 2000, you lost your shirt.
What Tom is saying,
and that's true. Well, I'm not arguing. There's no argument about that, right?
That's
correct. Sometimes people make money, sometimes they lose money.
If you're early in your career, you'll come back on that. That's what's happened with me. Let me give you,
the
I'm going to interrupt you,
maybe,
but during the period of time that I've been in Social Security, my last statement, they have taken from me roughly $67,000, and a like amount has been put in from the companies. There's not been really a penny earned on that, and even if that money was put into some kind of interest-bearing, fairly safe account, there would have been more money for Social Security, not just me. You understand what I'm saying? Or if I would have taken that money, and you can run the numbers on it, a generous 6 or 7 rate of return, there would have been a couple $100,000 available into the fund.
And the problem with what you're saying is it totally depends upon the time in which you're investing and the health of the stock market.
Yeah.
In some ways, you're right. In some ways, you're dead wrong. If young people had started investing, for example, in the year 2000, they would be in very bad shape right now. Second of all, Social Security does not only deal with retirees. It deals with disabled people as well.
Lee, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Lee.
That's the big issue, I think, is that Social Security is not just a retirement system. And actually, Social Security is getting interest. You know, the federal government is borrowing against the Social Security Trust Fund and paying them interest on that money that it's giving back to them. Anyhow, let's move along. Tony in Washington, D.C. on the line. We've only got about a minute and a half left before we have to take a break here. Tony, what's up?
Oh, thank you so much, and Merry Christmas to you all, and Happy New Year's to you all, too.
Thank you.
You too.
Just simple, straightforward. I heard what the young man was saying, but he was being so myopic on his view. He never said before, like he was trying to say, Mr. Bernie or Congressman Bernie, that the other people who depends on that, if they lose their share, people who are putting into it, they won't have any money. And who's going to come back and benefit them if they lose their share? I mean, if they lose investment. What's plan B?
That's exactly right.
Also,
so even if some people do well, some people may not do well, and what happens to those people is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Tony. It's got to work for everybody, and it's got to be a system that is right across the board. I'm talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. This is our Brunch with Bernie segment on the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to call in. Talk radio for the rest of us.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
Scientists document the decline of amphibians around the world, and they say the same problem could hit other types of animals in the future. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Amphibians are extremely sensitive animals, and their numbers are in decline. A recent study found that one-third of all amphibian species are at risk of extinction. That adds up to about 1,800 species altogether, and of those, several hundred are headed toward extinction rapidly. The study is called the Global Amphibian Assessment. It was directed by Simon Stewart, a biologist who works for the International Union for Conservation of Nature. Stewart says disease and climate change appear to be two particularly nasty problems.
The amphibians have narrow ecological tolerances, and so they are often the first species to be affected by new emerging threats, as has proven to be the case in these declines associated with disease and climate change. If the global environment continues to deteriorate for reasons such as these, and especially if climate change continues, it can only be expected to affect other groups of species that are hardier and more robust.
Stewart uses the word sinister to describe problems that now threaten amphibians. He says they were unpredicted and unpredictable. He says similar problems could hit birds and mammals in the not-too-distant future.
I think as long as we continue to let the basic life support systems of the planet erode, we're going to see more sinister happenings like this. The amphibians are important in their own right, we believe, but they're also a wake-up call for many other things.
The full report is available online. The web address is globalamphibians.org. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Thank you.
listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu.
Melech Alam. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, 5 minutes before the hour. And Walt in Crescent City, California. You're on the line with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Welcome, Walt.
Good morning. Thank you. I just wanted to point out my private retirement system, quasi-public, really, lost $44 billion between 2000 and about 2003.
And how did that affect individuals, Walt?
Well, it didn't really yet because they've still got a huge amount of money, but it didn't portend well for the future.
That's right.
Making money now, and in fact, they're doing quite well. But $44 billion in the next turnaround, we could lose another $44 billion. I don't know how many of those can we afford.
Right.
And
go ahead.
That's right. And many state retirement funds have seen also a significant decline. The point is, as I think Tom indicated a moment ago, Social Security. Function is to guarantee that whatever the economic climate, people are going to get what they were promised. It has worked, and it will continue to work if we strengthen it.
Right, and it pays for a lot of people who aren't just retirees. And so, you know,
That's right. You
say, gee, I put a dollar in, I want my dollar back. Well, no, you put a dollar in, and maybe 10 cents of it is going to go to some kid with muscular dystrophy, you know, who also is falling through the cracks in our program. Anyhow, let's see, Xavier in Santa Cruz, California, is on the line. Xavier, you're on.
Hi.
You're live on the air.
Yeah, can you hear me?
We sure can.
Okay, great. Yeah, I agree with you folks about Social Security being insurance, not a retirement fund. I have a situation where a number of years ago, I was. First of all, let me just say that.
Xavier, we've only got about 30 seconds here, so if you can.
Okay, well, all right. I'm very intelligent. I've got no college degree. I was working at a TV repair shop, and I was. Injured my back. It's like pulling teeth getting Social Security, and I'm not paying into it anymore. I can't get Social Security, but I'm not working. So I don't know, two things. I'm not able to collect on my injuries, and I'm not able to collect great amounts in the future because I'm not paying into it now.
Good point. What I would suggest, Xavier, is, first of all, contact your congressional office. Sometimes congressional offices can be helpful in working through the bureaucracy and getting benefits for people that they're entitled to.
Okay.
So contact your local congressman and see. And this, you know, highlights, again, the kinds of tweaking that might be necessary in Social Security, don't you think, Bernie?
Absolutely.
I mean, these kinds of situations. Great. Congressman Bernie Sanders has been with us today. It's the Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
Do appreciate it. We'll see you next week on Friday.
And let me wish everybody a very happy holiday season.
Thank you. And you and your family also, Bernie.
Thank you.
Okay, bye now. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Retirees older than 65 got hit with a 24% hike in their monthly out-of-pocket health insurance premium payments in 2004. That's according to a new report from the Kaiser Family Foundation. Michelle Kitchman is a senior policy analyst with Kaiser.
Many of these changes involve increasing retiree contributions to premiums, increasing retiree co-insurance or co-payments. That's what they pay for their health care services. The good news is that we did find that few employers said that they were terminating subsidized health benefits for current retirees.
Most employers surveyed said they plan to continue prescription drug benefits for retirees after the Medicare drug benefit starts in 2006. Kitchman says since 1988, the percentage of employers offering health insurance to retirees has dropped sharply.
We have seen a decline in the share of employers that are actually offering these benefits to retirees. The decline went from 66% of employers offering such benefits in 1988 to about 36% in 2004.
On average, retirees younger than 65 pay $187 toward their monthly insurance premiums. Retirees older than 65 pay an average of $101 per month. Kitchman says the Kaiser Foundation report shows current retirees are likely to hang on to their health insurance, but younger workers face retirement without that benefit.
The more daunting news is that some employers gave us indication that they intend to terminate benefits for future retirees. So that is current workers today may be less assured of receiving retiree health benefits when they retire.
800 workers at a meatpacking plant in Colorado are being laid off today. The workers at the Swift & Company plant in Greeley, Colorado, are losing their jobs 11 days before a contract with ConAgra Foods expires. The plant is the largest provider of jobs in Greeley, which is located in the already struggling Weld County. Even before the layoffs were announced, United Way reported that it receives about 50 calls a day from people seeking assistance, and the county food bank can barely keep up with the demand. The plant says that some workers could be rehired within 18 months as it begins to produce new meat products.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Poverty in rural America continues to be higher than in urban areas. In 2003, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, 14.2% of people living in rural America were poor. The urban poverty percentage is 12.1%. Since poverty statistics began to be collected in the 1960s, people living in rural areas have always suffered higher poverty rates than those in our cities. During the 90s, though, poverty in the countryside declined, hitting a record low of 13.4% in 2000.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Time for another peek into the lifestyles of the rich and cranky. Being rich really can be tough. Yes, you do get lots of stuff, houses, cars, gadgets, games, gizmos, and other toys to keep you amused as you idle away your time. But then, you have all that stuff to deal with. Just keeping it dusted must be taxing. And of course, you keep buying more stuff because, well, you're rich. You can afford it. But then, you have more to deal with and, what's a rich person to do? Of course, do what regular people do. Have a yard sale. This is precisely the solution that Caroline Kennedy came upon when she realized that she simply had too much stuff. In her own words, "I found myself again with more houses and belongings than I could possibly use or enjoy." Yes, Caroline, we can only imagine what a burden that must be. So, she's having a yard sale. Not literally, for wealthy neighbors would find it tacky beyond belief for the Kennedys to display their castaways on the lawn of the family compound at Hyannis Port. No, no, this will be done properly. An elite New York City auction house will handle the February sale of Caroline's stuff, and it is mostly just stuff. For sure, there are some special items and rare family photos of John F. Kennedy, but the bulk of the lot is much like what you'd put out for your yard sale. A fiberglass kitchen tray, some duck decoys, pieces and bits of a set of plain dinner dishes, a few dinged-up end tables, a pair of folding suitcase racks, and, get this, a bunch of mason jars. But while it is just stuff, it is Kennedy stuff, so Caroline's yard sale is expected to fetch a minimum of $1 million. Indeed, a special 380-page catalog of her stuff has been printed, and the catalog itself is tagged at $50 a copy. This is Jim Hightower saying, maybe the Kennedys need the money, but really, shouldn't she just have donated some of this stuff to Goodwill?
If you've been thinking about consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
1 in 4 adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. What sort of an administration can we expect for the next 4 years? I have a feeling a lot of people have not even really been noticing what's been going on for the last 4 years. In terms of who's been in charge of what and how they've been doing it. But in some ways, I suppose that's now water under the bridge. Welcome back to the program, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com, the website. If you want to drop into our live chat room, click live chat. It'll take you over to Democratic Forum on CompuServe. As Utah Governor Sarah Luck in today's Wall Street Journal writes, as Utah Governor Michael Levitt launched a novel effort in 2002 to reduce the ranks of the uninsured, he played Robin Hood, but with a twist, taking from the poor to help others who were poor. This, by the way, is the guy that George W. Bush has just nominated for Health and Human Services as the head of HHS, the cabinet branch of government that will administer Medicare. And here, by trimming health benefits and raising fees for some Medicaid recipients, he was able to offer bare-bones coverage to thousands of low-income residents who didn't qualify for state federal health programs for the poor. Now, that sounds like a nice thing, right? He expanded it. An additional 18,500 low-income people were actually enrolled into the program. Hotly debated in Utah, notes Sarah Luck, the initiative is now getting national scrutiny because Mr. Levitt has been nominated to be Secretary of Health and Human Services. Critics say the coverage the new Utah program offers the formerly uninsured is so basic as to be inadequate. It doesn't, for example, include hospitals or specialist care. So this is Levitt's idea of Medicare, his Medicaid in Utah. If you get sick and you need to go to the hospital, we're sorry, we don't pay for hospital visits. Maybe you can set up a cot next to the hospital, and the doctor can run out and visit you there in the snow, because they will pay for doctor visits. However, if you need a specialist, say you've had a heart attack and you need a cardiologist, they're not going to pay for that either. So you can set up your cot in the snow next to the hospital, and they won't pay for the cardiologist either. I wonder if emergency room physicians are considered specialists under this program. The Wall Street Journal goes on to say, and they say the program, which was the first of its kind, sets a bad precedent in taking from Medicaid recipients to give to other low-income people who hadn't been eligible for Medicaid. Cindy Mann, a health policy researcher at Georgetown University, says, quote, this approach just gave people a lot less than they needed and made other low-income people pay for it. Well, isn't that the Republican way? I mean, isn't that the conservative way? Have rich people pay for it? No. Have the middle class provide some sort of social safety net for the rest of us? Because you never know, it might be you who's next. No. Poor people, it's their own damn fault, right? It's moral failings. And somehow, oddly, during times of economic crisis, like during the Great Depression, we have a lot of morally corrupt people running around. And other times, like during the Clinton administration, when the economy is booming, you have a lot of highly moral people running around. During the downtime, did I say that wrong? During the Great Depression, we had a lot of immoral people running around because there was all this poverty, and of course, it's all their fault. It must just, look at this from the conservative point of view. It must just be that some generations are morally pure and other generations are morally corrupt. And in fact, you know, they're promoting that. There are cons who are out there going on TV. I got a booking request a week or so ago. In fact, I was tempted to bring this guy in the program. I probably should. Who, his whole shtick, and he's running around doing all the right-wing talk shows. His whole thing is the boomers are morally corrupt, and they are destroying America. The baby boom generation, they're destroying America. They have the values of the 60s. They're a bunch of leftover hippies. And they don't get it, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it's all their fault. It's all the fault of people who are between roughly 45 and 65 years old. Everything that's going wrong with America. The decline in moral values, the unemployment, the problems in the economy. Well, George Bush actually is that age, as are most of the members of his cabinet. And most of the millionaires and billionaires who are pushing these economic policies that are causing these economic problems we're facing right now, where we have literally the worst job market at this moment, even with the so-called recovery going on that we've had since the Great Depression. So maybe it is the boomers. Just, I think he's identifying the wrong boomers. Another interesting little piece, a little tidbit here in today's Wall Street Journal. Charter Cable former official enters guilty plea, an article by Peter Grant. You'll recall a couple of days ago, maybe it was yesterday, day before, I don't remember. All these stories, we actually covered many of them this week, where there was a company that had committed some sort of major fraud against consumers. Against consumers. In fact, it was a company that was selling retirement plans to GIs. And they had this whole affinity marketing program where they hired former military people to sell to military people and stuff like that. And they got hit with, as I recall, it was a $44 million fine. So they ripped off military families. They ripped off these military families big time. Ripped them off hugely. And nobody's going to go to jail. Nobody's even getting their hand slapped as an individual. The company is going to pay a fine. The company was censured. Now, here's another company, Charter Communications, Inc. They pled guilty to one count of conspiracy. David Barford, a former chief operating officer, they're holding the COO, the head of the company, personally accountable to this. Pled guilty to one count of conspiracy and acknowledged that he participated in a scheme at the cable giant to inflate the number of subscribers reported to Wall Street. Now, I want you to note that. Reported to Wall Street. Charter Communications did not rip off average middle-class people. They ripped off Wall Street. So what would the penalty be? Let's see. You rip off the average working people, your company pays a fine and you walk. Nobody's held personally responsible. You rip off the barons of Wall Street, who give great, huge and piles of money to our politicians. And here it comes. Mr. Barford, along with others, counted and reported subscribers in a manner that he now realizes violated the law, said his attorney Jeffrey Demarath. Mr. Barford, who entered the plea at the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Missouri in St. Louis, faces a jail term of as much as 5 years. 5 years in the slammer this guy may get because he ripped off Wall Street. Same thing with Martha Stewart. She's in jail because, well, ultimately for the perjury charge, but the original charge was that she had engaged in insider trading. She had ripped off Wall Street. Or they said she had. Turned out there was no evidence ultimately of that, but that's what they said. What's the message here? Mess with the average working person, and your company will get a fine. You can still do business, and nobody's going to be held accountable. Mess with the millionaires and billionaires on Wall Street. They're going to nail your rear end of the wall. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Lynn in Eureka, California is on the line. Hey, Lynn, what's on your mind?
Well, I just remember your talk made me reflect on hearing Rush Limbaugh ranting. This is back before Bush took office the first time.
Yeah.
And he was ranting about how, and I don't remember the percentages, but there were less rich people and they were paying more in taxes than the poor were. And it was time that the poor paid their share.
Yeah, right. and the way that these guys get away with this kind of lie is by using the word income before the word tax. Because the reality is that if you only earn $10,000 a year, you don't pay any income taxes.
Yeah.
But you do pay sales tax. You do pay FICA tax, Social Security tax. You do pay Medicare tax. You do pay property taxes. You do pay gasoline taxes. And when you add all those taxes up, you find that the bottom quintile in the United States, the bottom one-fifth, is paying about 17% of their total income in taxes. The middle quintiles run anywhere from 18 to 19%. I forget which one is which, but it's like 18, 19, 18. And the top quintile is paying between 19 and 20% of their income in taxes. And so it's pretty much evenly distributed because of progressive income taxes.
Right.
And because at the very top, these numbers, by the way, were all before Bush passed his most recent tax cut that says that if you earn your income sitting on your butt waiting for, around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive, you only pay a 15% income tax rate rather than the maximum rate of 32% or whatever the top rate is right now. And so actually probably the top group is now down to paying, you know, at or less what the very bottom group is paying. But yeah, it's absurd. It's absurd, and easily debunked and debunked on no shortage of websites and books and.
But it's never covered in the news, and I think that you had a guest on earlier that was talking about using the L word lie.
Yeah, well,
I think
it was
we
that
need
was
to
that
start
was
calling up all the news services and telling them lie, 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 and we need to also follow up on what you had us do earlier this week and call the Times of New York every day and hound them about the election results.
Yeah, the New York Times and the Washington Post.
One shot. We have to do it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We and the networks, I would say as well.
Everybody,
CBS, NBC, ABC,
also what we're doing in
PBS. Yeah, PBS, NPR. Let's let these folks know that we would really like to know what's going on with this vote count in Ohio.
Yeah.
We would really like to know the fact that is it really true that what a member of the United States Congress just said on the Tom Hartman program that Social Security right now is solvent through the year 2052 for the next 48 years?
Yeah.
If so, why do you keep using the word crisis and problem in your news reports?
I think if we just keep calling up, maybe we can turn this news coverage around a little.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the absence of being able to go out and vote for somebody tomorrow or next week, although we do need to be doing the political organizing and
we have
getting,
to do all that too.
Getting
but this
involved.
Is part of it, I think.
Yeah, this is direct action. Absolutely. Well said, Lynn. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you, and happy holidays.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye.
It's 17, 18 minutes past the hour. Tort reform is the next big thing coming up. Sannyasa, on our message board, you can get to TomHartman.com, click on the message boards. There's some really bright people on there laying out some just incredible stuff. And Sannyasa lays out the five protections against frivolous lawsuits that are already in our tort system. First, it can take 5-6 years for a lawsuit to go through. So only legitimate ones do it. Second, we have a jury system in this country. Do you believe in a jury system or not? I mean, are you willing to trust the jury? Or why is it that the Republican legislators want to say, no, we're not going to leave it up to juries? Third, appellate judges can unilaterally reduce or even eliminate an award that a jury has given. That's the protection on the thing. And finally, nothing prohibits insurance companies from mediating and avoiding going to court. There is no tort crisis in the United States. And those states, and I believe that there's 13 of them now, that have put $250,000 caps on pain and suffering, have seen their medical malpractice rates go down an average of 0.25% in 1 year. Nothing. 20 minutes after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Is the Tom Hartman program.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman radio program. Truth and common sense in broadcasting for a change. It's time for our daily report from the Talk Radio News Service. Ellen Ratner with us from Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, the 9/11 bill is totally, completely done, and it is signed. And, of course, it may not make a whole lot of changes, but we know about that. This is a Christmas party week in Washington. Actually, we were just at the Pentagon Christmas party last night, at the White House Christmas party, and then the party is going, they're now what's called the basement Christmas party. I'm trying to give Adam directions at the same time. The basement okay. Christmas party is happening today. So after this week, Washington completely shuts down. But the White House is now today initiating their Oceans Initiative. And so that is happening. They're trying to say that they're going to make the oceans cleaner and safer. Of course, a lot of the other groups are particularly disagreeing with that. They say that there's no way that the White House measure to clean the oceans is going to work in any way, shape, or form. The president is in town most of next week, and then she is going to he is going to be going to Camp David for Christmas. But other than that, there is not a whole lot going on.
Yeah.
We do know that the Treasury and IRS are saying that they are going to issue, and they're in the process of issuing new rules to crack down on abusive tax shelters. And that is part of the president's program. And one last thing, Tom, that Cuba apparently has erected some billboards highlighting the Iraqi prisoner abuses. And as you know, more and more is coming out of that about that.
Oh, my. Ellen, now that the bill creating the new Homeland Security Czar or whatever it's called has been passed and signed into law, now that all this has happened, does that mean that we're going to have an opportunity to read it and find out what's in it?
Well, yeah.
Are things starting to come out? I mean, has anybody, as far as I know, no member of Congress actually read this thing all the way through before they signed it. They had about 8 hours.
I think they had some of their staff to do it, but it's just like the omnibus appropriations bills. We find things in those bills that, you know, the press may even put somebody to start combing it, and nobody ever is able to figure out what's on there until months later. And you find they've attached things. You find things that they appropriate X amount of money for the Pentagon, but then you find out that it really is sort of a health care issue, that it's in some hidden account. I mean, it really takes months and months to tease this stuff apart.
I'm wondering to what extent Patriot 2 is infiltrating. I mean, you know, little pieces of it have shown up here and there in other pieces of legislation, but it seems like this would be the perfect place to bury a chunk of it, you know, a further erosion of our civil liberties.
Well, I think so. I think that, you know, that what they're going to do with Patriot 2, instead of passing it as a big bill, they're just going to do some very small kinds of things that will go a little bit, you know, at a time that will attach itself to other bills.
Right.
They're not stupid enough to put a big Patriot Act 2, I don't think, right at this
point.
No,
I agree with you.
Let me say one other thing that I have heard, that some of the Democrats are secretly worried that in the next elections that they could lose the other 5 seats, and the 60 votes necessary for cloture just is not going to happen.
Yeah, and that's a pretty urgent problem.
Is going to happen on their side, but we're not going to be able to stop that.
Unless the Republicans invoke the nuclear option to begin
that's
with.
Right.
You know, and we'll see. We'll keep an eye on that. Ellen, thanks for the update. I do appreciate it.
You got it.
And have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next Monday. Thanks a lot. It's 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Tom Hartman, actually, that's me, here with you. Straight from the heart of truth in broadcasting. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Retirees older than 65 got hit with a 24% hike in their monthly out-of-pocket health insurance premium payments in 2004. That's according to a new report from the Kaiser Family Foundation. Michelle Kitchman is a senior policy analyst with Kaiser.
Many of these changes involve increasing retiree contributions to premiums, increasing retiree co-insurance or co-payments. That's what they pay for their health care services. The good news is that we did find that few employers said that they were terminating subsidized health benefits for current retirees.
Most employers surveyed said they plan to continue prescription drug benefits for retirees after the Medicare drug benefit starts in 2006. Kitchman says since 1988, the percentage of employers offering health insurance to retirees has dropped sharply.
We have seen a decline in the share of employers that are actually offering these benefits to retirees. The decline went from 66% of employers offering such benefits in 1988 to about 36% in 2004.
On average, retirees younger than 65 pay $187 toward their monthly insurance premiums. Retirees older than 65 pay an average of $101 per month. Kitchman says the Kaiser Foundation report shows current retirees are likely to hang on to their health insurance, but younger workers face retirement without that benefit.
The more daunting news is that some employers gave us indication that they intend to terminate benefits for future retirees. So that is, current workers today may be less assured of receiving retiree health benefits when they retire.
800 workers at a meatpacking plant in Colorado are being laid off today. The workers at the Swift & Company plant in Greeley, Colorado, are losing their jobs 11 days before a contract with ConAgra Foods expires. The plant is the largest provider of jobs in Greeley, which is located in the already struggling Weld County. Even before the layoffs were announced, United Way reported that it receives about 50 calls a day from people seeking assistance, and the county food bank can barely keep up with the demand. The plant says that some workers could be rehired within 18 months as it begins to produce new meat products.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Poverty in rural America continues to be higher than in urban areas. In 2003, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, 14.2% of people living in rural America were poor. The urban poverty percentage is 12.1%. Since poverty statistics began to be collected in the 1960s, people living in rural areas have always suffered higher poverty rates than those in our cities. During the 90s, though, poverty in the countryside declined, hitting a record low of 13.4% in 2000.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Well, it's actually first-hand news. Time for our The Best of the Rest of the News segment. Today we have Jesse Abraham, founder and editor of TVNewsLies.org. He spent 9 years working at the Associated Press. www.tvnewslies, tvnewslies.org, has attracted over 2 million visitors. And Carolyn Kay, a computer software developer who's turned political activist. Carolyn started a website, www.makethemaccountable.com, which she's updated on an almost daily basis for more than 4 years. And Jesse and Carolyn, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
Great to have you both here. Jesse, first, for you on TV News Lies, what were the huge topics or the big issues of this week? Or what would you say was the major issue this week on TV News Lies?
Well, I think you touched a little bit. First of all, you guys are talking about the L word, and I just want to emphasize one thing about the L word. Lies doesn't necessarily mean telling an untruth. Lies, definition also includes leaving a false impression. And that's what basically what's going on in the mainstream press. I think some of the big stories of this week definitely have to do with the Ohio recount, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I think without noticing, unless people have gills, we should better start paying attention to what's going on with this administration and their environmental policies, because they are on a daily basis dismantling everything that's basically protecting this planet. So all the rest of the issues don't really count if there's no planet.
Well, even if we have gills, the world's oceans now contain 150 dead zones virtually devoid of life. The largest is 70,000 square kilometers, according to the UN Environmental Program.
So add the fact that we don't need oxygen and we have gills.
Yeah.
Another thing that has been going on is a little interesting story here, and I'm not understanding why it's not getting more attention. It kind of relates to today's decision about the intelligence bill that came out here. The intelligence bill basically was a stamp of the word scapegoat on the intelligence community right now.
Yeah.
Basically forgave the Bush administration for any misuse or abuse of intelligence over the past 4 years.
And for just sitting around for the first 9 months after they came into office and saying, Bin Laden, there's no Bin Laden, terrorists, there's no... And then all of a sudden 9/11 happens and it's like, whoa, all of a sudden... this happened on their watch, and nobody has held them accountable. And this, I agree with you. The entire thing was a great way of just sliding that whole thing off.
Well, not only that, you had the kibosh on the Bin Laden investigation as soon as the Bush administration came in, which led to the resignation of John O'Neill, who was our number one Al-Qaeda guru in the country.
Yeah.
And just this week, a very interesting gentleman, Jimmy Walter, spent about $3 million of his own money putting ads on television trying to raise interest in what's going on in the independent citizens query into the events of 9/11. He just offered a $100,000 reward for anyone that can prove that the towers came down as the 9/11 commission reports say.
Yeah,
and I think people have to start paying attention to that. That's a really big thing.
That should be an interesting one. Okay, great. Jesse Abraham with TV News and Lies.org. Carolyn Kay with MakeThemAccountable.com. Carolyn, what, in your opinion, or what in your website, were the hot topics of this week, this past week?
Well, those were some of them. I am a person who likes to fight the right wing at every single opportunity.
And you do it marvelously.
So one of
say.
My big stories this week has been this fight about Christmas, using the word Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, years ago there was a Put the Christ Back in Christmas kind of movement.
Sure.
But this is different. This is people saying, you have to say Christmas.
the boycott against Macy's. Let's boycott Macy's because they're saying Happy Holidays.
Right, because they say Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas.
Imagine
how big their banners would have to be to include all of the holidays. You know, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, name them all.
Yeah, Happy New Year,
Happy Yule.
Yeah, there you go.
Happy Saturnalia.
We can't forget. Yeah.
Happy Festivus for the Seinfeld community.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that was a big one.
Happy Holidays, that sounds like a good idea to me.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm not one of these right-wing crazies. So I'm convinced that it's one of those ways that the right-wing sleaze machine uses to keep their people riled up. You know, they're red meat.
Well, this is the thing. You know, Hitler really laid this strategy out so well in Mein Kampf. He basically said that, and other writings, but Mein Kampf actually did it, that without, and Leo Strauss actually taught this at the University of Chicago to his disciples, that without a clear enemy, that you can't have a movement. That in order to pull people together, there must be a common enemy. And a fictitious enemy is the best kind of enemy because you can manipulate the perception of that enemy. And so we have this reality in the United States that the majority of people in the United States are either secular or religious Christians. And you have a holiday, Christmas, which is a federal holiday, which is also a religious holiday. And these guys are just holding their breath, praying that some atheist somewhere will sue in some court someplace to make Christmas not a federal holiday anymore so that they can really go berserk about this thing. And,
well,
it's a divide and conquer.
I think some of the things that they do come from the right wing. There was something about some news outlet recently about baby Jesus's being stolen out of manger scenes and things like that, and it says don't waste electricity to make it look like it comes from the left. You know, I don't know any people on the left that would not honor somebody else's religion like that.
Yeah, although there's no shortage of 13-year-old kids who might. I mean, you know, that good old fashioned vandalism is always going to be with us. But
so,
that doesn't.
That's one of my favorites. The next favorite is the Bernie Kerik deal.
Oh yeah! Did you hear the latest today? He's been Judith Reagan. He's been stalking her, and not just stalking her children. Her son is driving home from college, and he calls up Judith Reagan, according to this report that was in the paper today. Calls her up and says, "I'm behind your son. He's driving," and he describes the car and the license plate. And she's like, "Oh my God, what's it?" And he calls up. She's in a restaurant having lunch with some guy, and he calls her up and he says, "I see you're sitting across from a man who's wearing a brown suit with a red tie on, and he's just ordered a pastrami sandwich." And she's like, "Oh my God, he's watching me!" You know, it's a.
And he was.
Passionate conservative.
That's the thing. I mean, this is typical of them. This is typical of their way of believing and doing things. If you don't do things my way, I'm going to bully you until you do. See? No wonder George Bush liked the guy.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not willing to get quite that level of personal. I think the big problem that this identifies. Certainly, there is a huge bully mentality, Carolyn, and you've done such a good job of pointing this out in the emails that you send out to people who are on your list within this administration, and has been for the last 4 years. But even beyond that, there's also this sense of we're going to bring our buddies in. It doesn't matter. You know, we're going to bring the coal companies in. It doesn't matter what they do to the air. We're going to bring the insurance companies and the Wall Street in. It doesn't matter what they do to people's retirement. We're going to bring the drug company. It doesn't matter what they do to Medicare. We're going to bring, you know, Rudy Giuliani's partner in. It doesn't matter that, you know, we don't need to vet him. It's not a big deal. It's this kind of cronyism, this old boy network, and this is one of the few examples where it actually got outed.
Well, and it's also a case of people being rewarded. Giuliani, for example, for his loyalty to Bush. Loyalty to Bush is the number one thing. I expect any day now we're supposed to see big portraits of Bush hanging from government buildings, you know, and things like that.
Well, they're already. I mean, I believe that it was you, Carolyn, who sent me the email with the billboards that were down south that had a picture of George Bush and said, "Our leader."
Yeah.
And it just reminded me of, you know, the old...
Unser
Führer. Jesse, you were going to make a point.
With Kerik, he was a good soldier. I don't know if you remember. Basically, every time he made a public appearance when he was talking about training the troops in Iraq, because he was in charge of training some of the police force in Iraq.
Right, for 3 months.
Every time he made a public appearance, and you can tell this guy wasn't very verbally skilled, it would be obvious that this guy was under orders somehow to get the term 9/11 into his comments.
Yeah.
It would be like this non sequitur. He'd say it just out of nowhere. I was there on the morning of 9/11. This guy was a soldier. He's towing the line, and he was a good guy. As far as he's a big, tough New York cop with a good name, the Giuliani name, but this guy just did what he was told, and that's one of the things that he was looked at by the Bush administration.
In other words,
they reward loyalty in the Bush administration.
Yeah,
Medal of Freedom this week went to George Tenet, who helped them lie to whip up the frenzy about the Iraq War, to Tommy Franks, who waged that war, and to Paul Bremer, who shepherded in the all of the chaos that's there now.
Yeah, and Tommy Franks waged most of that war from Tampa, Florida, didn't he?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's where the command center was for the war in Iraq, and that's where Tommy Franks was for most of the war.
You would think it might be somewhere in the Middle East.
No, it was in Tampa, Florida. So.
Probably where the headquarters for the Iraqi elections is going to be, too, in Florida.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're probably already getting the machines from Diebold. We're sounding very cynical here. I suppose that's the appropriate role, actually, of the Fourth Estate in a democracy. You know, Thomas, here's our quote for the day, in fact, from Thomas Jefferson. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. And I think Jesse Abraham with TVNewsLies.org and Carolyn Kay with MakeThemAccountable.com, what you two are doing, along with the other what would you call alternative media or real media?
Sources of information.
Yeah, sources of information.
Reality-based community.
There you go. There are helping keep us all straight and keep us all, you know, awake and aware of what's going on. Jesse, what do you see coming up over the next week? What do you think is, you know, Christmas is coming up.
I've got to see two things. I've got to see some more exodus taking place in the intelligence community, maybe more of the foot soldiers. I think what's going on with it, I think this is a really bad thing that just took place as far as the good people in the intelligence community, because this was an official stamp of scapegoat on them. I got to see them going, and I've got to see some more public griping going on in the military. They just announced today that they're 30% under their goals in recruiting for the National Guard. We can't continue the pace of this militarism that the Bush administration wants while our military is just being drained the way it is.
Well, although they are now actually above their recruiting quotas for the Marine Corps, because they're offering $20,000 sign-up bonuses. And they've just, I believe they announced yesterday that they're going to start doing something similar to that, offering larger incentives to guardsmen to get them
in.
They
have $15,000 a piece for guardsmen, and it's not working.
Yeah, wow.
And people join the Guard for a different reason. You know, they join the Guard for domestic, you know, issues, not to go wage war.
And in fact, historically, that's what the Guard has done, is when the Mississippi River floods, the Guard shows up. If there's a hurricane or a tornado, the Guard shows up. So those are the things that you're seeing coming down the road over the next week. How about you, Carolyn Kay, with Make Them Accountable?
Well, I'm sort of thinking that there might be more of a hot seat for Donald Rumsfeld.
Interesting.
Yeah, we've seen some people actually come out in public and criticize him. Now, you know, that doesn't happen without permission.
Trent Lott
everybody
criticized
on the
him
right
yesterday.
Walks in lock goosestep.
But here's the thing, Carolyn. Yesterday or the day before, Trent Lott came out and criticized Rumsfeld. And then yesterday, Limbaugh opens his program with a 20-minute rant about how Trent Lott should shut up and go back to where he came from, and that he has no right to criticize Rumsfeld.
It's some more mainstream, if you want to call them that, Republicans.
I know, but these guys are typically reading the same talking points, and all of a sudden they're not. What's going on inside the Republican Party?
My take, Rumsfeld's not going anywhere, in my take, because he's a big part of the policy in that White House.
Yeah.
The policy is the project for a new American century, and he's a key player. He, in a sense, is part of George Bush's boss. So I don't think he goes anywhere. This might be a good thing for Lott to gain support by his constituency, but I don't
that's my sense of it, is that Rumsfeld and Cheney are really the powers, and Wolfowitz are really the powers behind this whole thing. Carolyn, what are your thoughts on this? And also, I'm wondering, Carolyn, if you or Jesse, either one of you, had an opportunity to watch that 3-hour BBC special, The Power of Nightmares.
No, not yet, but I am looking forward to it.
Oh, you have to see that.
I posted it. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, oh, it's like taking the red pill in the Matrix. You will never see the world again the same. And this is just a solid 3 hours straight, good, clean, high-quality, well-done BBC documentary that so shocked England that Tony Blair got on a plane.
What you talked about in your article, though, Tom, it doesn't even include some of the other very shocking things that our government has done.
For example?
What was that project where they wanted to, they were going to bomb Florida
Operation
or something and pretend that it was Castro?
Oh, yeah.
Operation Northwoods.
That's right, Operation Northwoods, yeah.
Those sorts of things. And the fact that they actually did use humans as experiments with LSD and the Tuskegee experiments.
Yeah, but see, all that stuff was in the past. It's been uncovered. We've got protections in place in theory. My concern is that we went through this period of discovering these kinds of horrible things. We thought we fixed it, particularly after, you know, Nixon and all those scandals. And now this administration is going back to secrecy, cover-ups,
The Nixon bunch is back in power. I mean, even Richard Perle, who was part of the Defense Policy Board, and he's no longer part of the policy board, he was a Nixon crony. He was actually investigated in the 70s for passing secrets, military secrets to Israel, and he ends up back in an administration. And you have this all over the place. A lot of these cronies from Iran-Contra, which is another one of these indications, are back in government. All
it's true.
Experience in deceiving the public.
And the other thing is, the Pinochet was just indicted, and there was an article on Common Dreams about how there wasn't a single newspaper in the United States. There was one mention in the Post, one mention in the New York Times, but over a 30-day period, there was not a single mention in any other major mainstream papers, including those two during this one segment, of Pinochet and Nixon, you know, together. Well, anyhow, we're out of time for the segment. I do appreciate Jesse Abraham of TVNewsLies.org and Carolyn Kay of MakeThemAccountable.com. Thank you both for being with us today. For our best
of
the rest.
Thank you, Tom.
Happy holidays to you both. Have a wonderful time and a great weekend. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. It's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This year, give a Christmas gift of inner peace, mental health, and transformation in the form of a fun, beautiful game you play with your body and brain based on meditation, breathing, and biofeedback. Go to opednews.com to click on the Wild Divine banner to order the game that Yoga Journal says turns the quest for calm into entertainment. In most games, you find weapons. With Wild Divine, you connect your computer to your body and play the game with your mind, heart, and breath. So you find new abilities and awareness truly within yourself that you use to win the game and then apply in your real life. PC Magazine says Wild Divine is innovative and fun, and even better, it's very effective. And they give it 5 stars. It's shipped with both Windows and Mac software.
The Wild Divine game is a great Christmas gift that will make a real difference in a person's life. Go to opednews.com now and click on the Wild Divine banner to order it in time for Christmas. That's opednews.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
Efforts to control air pollution go back several centuries, according to a new book. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Ice cores drilled from Greenland show that air pollution began when humans started smelting copper and iron thousands of years ago. But it didn't become a public issue until the 18th century, when citizen groups formed in London to fight air so black and dirty it made people sick. Joe Sherman says the fight for cleaner air became part of a morality and justice-based movement in England, which then spread to some U.S. cities by the late 18th century.
It was unjust for a lot of people in poor economic circumstances, the same way it is now. It's in a lot of ways, if not changed at all.
Sherman is the author of a new book called Gasp, The Swift and Terrible Beauty of Air. He traces people's views of air from Egyptian mythology to the present, and he examines how air pollution grew as a public issue. For example, smog began to evoke concern in the 1930s, in Los Angeles, of course. Sherman says L.A. then saw a huge industrial buildup in the 1940s to meet the military needs of a country at war, and the city's love affair with the automobile took off in the post-war boom. By the 1950s, people were protesting L.A.'s poor air quality.
L.A. was like the canary in the coal mine for the rest of the world, because the same conditions gradually started to creep all over the place. So we have smog initially in L.A., but then as the automobile culture spread around the world and you had more and more emissions on a large daily basis surrounding cities, you had smog spreading everywhere.
Smog, mostly made up of ground-level ozone, is a public health problem in cities around the world. And it continues to plague Los Angeles. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
All I want for Christmas, all I need for Christmas, all I really want is to be with you on Christmas.
Oh, isn't that sweet? That's, you know, it really is all about family. The holidays, I mean, well, not just the holidays. I mean, it's so important to set your priorities straight, in my opinion. Not wanting to sound like a preacher here, but it just is so important. I'm informed by the folks in our chat room that Tommy Franks was in Qatar, or gutter, depending on how you where you're from in the world and how you pronounce it, or Qatar. Not in Tampa. That the command center is in Tampa, but the CENTCOM command, where Tommy Franks was operating out of, was in Qatar. So I stand corrected, and thank you, folks, for filling me in on that, especially Kevin, who actually, in our chat room, who actually lives in Tampa. So it's always great to have. It's incredible. The electronic age, you know, you just bang, you get the information, there it is. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Paul in Santa Fe, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Briefly, I wanted to ask you about, did you write a piece for maybe Common Dreams about the then Vice President of the United States in the Roosevelt Wallace? I forget his first name.
Yeah, I did. It's called, the title of it was The Ghost of Henry Wallace Says It Can Happen Here. And if you go to tomhartman.com and click on Articles on Democracy, you'll find it.
Yeah, and that was about his view on what American fascism would look like, in effect.
Well, and in fact, suggesting that American fascism was already making, that fascism was already making significant inroads in the United States, that it had always been around in a rather nascent form, and his laying out specifically how the increasing merger of corporate power and government power would lead to absolute fascism in the United States, and he hoped it wouldn't happen in his lifetime or in the following generation. He was quite explicit about it, Henry Wallace, Vice President under Roosevelt.
I guess my point is, obviously, at the 1944 Democratic Convention, he was replaced with Truman as the
That's right. Yeah, Roosevelt replaced every one of his vice presidents.
Yeah, and just thinking what a different world we'd be living in if Wallace had been vice president.
Yeah, Wallace was a pretty outspoken guy. Harry Truman was a little quieter. Yeah, that's one of the things I've not taken the time to really read a good, thorough, in-depth, detailed Roosevelt biography, and it's on my list of things to do one of these days. I don't frankly know why every single time that Roosevelt ran for president, and he ran and was elected four times, he changed his vice presidential candidate, and I don't know what happened with Henry Wallace, but Henry Wallace wrote one heck of an article for the New York Times about that, which I wrote my article about. It's
you know what state
one.
Wallace was from?
I don't, Paul. Paul, got to move along. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. It's Tom Hartman here with you. Truth and common sense in broadcasting.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis. poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Retirees older than 65 got hit with a 24% hike in their monthly out-of-pocket health insurance premium payments in 2004. That's according to a new report from the Kaiser Family Foundation. Michelle Kitchman is a senior policy analyst with Kaiser.
Many of these changes involve increasing retiree contributions to premiums, increasing retiree co-insurance or co-payments. That's what they pay for their health care services. The good news is that we did find that few employers said that they were terminating subsidized health benefits for current retirees.
Most employers surveyed said they plan to continue prescription drug benefits for retirees after the Medicare drug benefit starts in 2006. Kitchman says since 1988, the percentage of employers offering health insurance to retirees has dropped sharply.
We have seen a decline in the share of employers that are actually offering these benefits to retirees. The decline went from 66% of employers offering such benefits in 1988 to about 36% in 2004.
On average, retirees younger than 65 pay $187 toward their monthly insurance premiums. Retirees older than 65 pay an average of $101 per month. Kitchman says the Kaiser Foundation report shows current retirees are likely to hang on to their health insurance, but younger workers face retirement without that benefit.
The more daunting news is that some employers gave us indication that they intend to terminate benefits for future retirees. So that is current workers today may be less assured of receiving retiree health benefits when they retire.
800 workers at a meatpacking plant in Colorado are being laid off today. The workers at the Swift & Company plant in Greeley, Colorado, are losing their jobs 11 days before a contract with ConAgra Foods expires. The plant is the largest provider of jobs in Greeley, which is located in the already struggling Weld County. Even before the layoffs were announced, United Way reported that it receives about 50 calls a day from people seeking assistance, and the county food bank can barely keep up with the demand. The plant says that some workers could be rehired within 18 months as it begins to produce new meat products.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Poverty in rural America continues to be higher than in urban areas. In 2003, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, 14.2% of people living in rural America were poor. The urban poverty percentage is 12.1%. Since poverty statistics began to be collected in the 1960s, people living in rural areas have always suffered higher poverty rates than those in our cities. During the 90s, though, poverty in the countryside declined, hitting a record low of 13.4% in 2000.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
One of the greatest music joints in my town of Austin, Texas, was Liberty Lunch, which regularly featured up-and-coming local musicians as well as such national talents as Taj Mahal. This bar, cafe, and music yard was inexpensive, adventuresome, laid-back, unique, and, well, it was Austin. I say was because it's gone. A few years ago, our mayor gave taxpayer subsidies to lure something called CSC Corporation to town, giving it the spot of city-owned land that Liberty Lunch had rented for years. So now, we have a cold six-story building housing a high-tech military contractor that has no roots in Austin, is not in character with our city, and offers nothing to our way of life. What we do not have are the good eats, good sounds, and good spirit that emanated every night from that spot, drawing thousands of enthusiastic customers and helping define Austin for people everywhere. Austin is hardly alone in suffering a steady erosion of our homegrown businesses to impersonal corporate giants, big box stores, and cookie-cutter chains. It's probably happening where you live, too. No one voted for this, but these giants get public subsidies, wield massive advertising budgets, and have deep pocket financing and the political clout to bully their way in, remaking our communities in their own bland, self-serving image. But you and I don't have to support them. Let's assert our own grassroots buying power to proclaim a new economic independence. A group called AMIBA, American Independent Business Alliance, has organized the Indy Challenge, urging we the people to rediscover the local businesses that make our town special, from coffee shops to restaurants, bookstores to hardware stores, pharmacies to farmers markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, we have the power. Ask your friends, families, clubs, churches, unions, and local governments to join you in using their dollars for community self-determination. For help, call AMIBA, 406-582-1255.
As a small business owner, you turn multitasking into a fine art, because for you, doing several things all at the same time is just another day at the office. So Sam's Club offers the option of doing two things at once, buying items you need for your business while at the same time buying items you need for your home. This holiday season, jewelry's best kept secret is revealed. Discover fine quality diamonds at Sam's Club. Whether you're shopping for home or business, count on us to help you get it done. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
One in four adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, TomHartman.com, the website. If you want to drop into our live chat room, just click live chat. It'll take you over there to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. And interesting conversation going on in the chat room right now about the Republican light, the battle going on within the Democratic Party. David Sirota just published a piece, a brilliant article, as David Sirota's articles tend almost always to be. In fact, I would say always to be. I've never read anything by David that I thought was soft or weak or anything. I mean, this guy is really, really top-notch. Piece on commondreams.org. Which I think was originally published someplace else, I forget where it was published, in which he's suggesting that the folks over at the Democratic Leadership Council, Al Fromm and company, are foaming at the mouth again. These folks who are getting literally, here it is, it was originally published in The Nation, or it will be, actually, the January 3rd issue. It says, Al Fromm is once again foaming at the mouth. Fromm's group is funded by huge contributions from multinationals like Philip Morris, Texaco, Enron, and Merck, which have all at one point or another slathered the DLC. Now, this is the Democratic Leadership Council, not the DNC, the Democratic National Convention or Committee or whatever it is, has slathered the DLC with cash. The DLC, keep in mind, was co-founded by Bill Clinton and Al Gore. This is the New Democrats. And, you know, to give them their due, they were trying to keep the Democratic Party alive. The reality was that the main constituency for the Democratic Party has historically been, there have been a few. I mean, you start out with Jefferson, who founded the party back in 1796, 97, 98, depending on, you know, when you want to define it. Certainly by 1800. Jefferson had founded the party. And at that time, it was called the Democratic Republicans. And in the 1830s, they dropped the word Republicans off the end. And as the Whigs collapsed in the 1830s and the 1840s, in the late 1840s, early 1850s, a new party emerged called the Republican Party. And the interesting thing is that by that time, now Jefferson is dead, Madison's dead, all the founders were dead by then. We're two generations down the road, just before the Civil War. By that time, the Democratic Party, Jefferson's party, had become principally the party of slavery and of the South and of the old boy network. It had become very corrupt. And so the Republican Party came forward as the party of reform and held that relatively moral high ground. People in the South will argue this with you, but nonetheless, in my opinion, held that relatively high moral high ground until 1872. In 1872, the Republican Party held their convention, and the platform planks were put forward. I actually wrote an article about this. You go to TomHartmann.com and click on Articles on Democracy, and there's an article in there titled, Republicans, Please Take Your Party Back. And in 1872, the Republican Party, numerous planks were put forward for their platform that called for things like the right of women to vote, direct election of the Senate, progressive income taxes, an antitrust bill, antitrust legislation that would prevent corporations from getting so powerful and so large that they could corrupt democracy, making it illegal for corporations to participate in electoral processes or give money to politicians. Some very straightforward reforms. And the party hacks, as it were, turned them down. And this was the great schism of 1872. And so out of the Republican Party, that was when the Republican Party went bad, shall we say, just like the Democratic Party first went bad, arguably in the 1830s, say 1832, 1834. The Republican Party went bad 1872, and out of that came the populist and the progressive movements and the Grange movement, which had started in the late 1860s, but was really rolling by the 1870s and full-blown in the 1880s, which was the farmers fighting back against the Cargills and ADMs of their day, the big agricultural combines. And so the Republican Party was no longer the party of reform, and the Democratic Party was not the party of reform. They were still a corrupt party in the 1870s. So by the 1880s, the Democratic Party was figuring, okay, we'll pick up some of this action. And thus you had, you know, for example, the Senator Sherman from Ohio, Democratic Senator from Ohio in 1881, in 1880, actually, in December of 1880, proposing Senate Bill No. 1, the Sherman Antitrust Act, was passed the following year. And you had a lot of progressive and populist reforms that sometimes it was the Republicans pushing them. Teddy Roosevelt, for example, after, McKinley, was it, who died, who was the president, Roosevelt's vice president. And Roosevelt became president around 1900, and in 1907, Teddy Roosevelt got passed a law making it illegal for corporations to give money to politicians, the first serious attempt at campaign finance reform. Roosevelt pushed for a national minimum wage. The Supreme Court then declared it unconstitutional, as I recall, in 1913. Roosevelt pushed for, he was really a pretty progressive guy, and he was a Republican. This was the Republican Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt. And then he got out, and when he was out of power, he became a reformer and tried to come back in with the Bull Moose Party, a third party. And so, again, the Republican Party went back to being the corrupt party. And the Democrats came back into their own after the crash of 29. The Democrats came back with Franklin Roosevelt and became the party of the working class, as it were, the party of the average American. Now, I tell you this whole long history because from the 1930s, from 1932, when Franklin Roosevelt was first elected, up until really the end of Jimmy Carter's administration, the Democratic Party not only was overtly the party of working people, but derived most of their support from working people. And the way that they did that, because working people by and large aren't organized into groups the way, for example, chambers of commerce are, the way that they got their money from working people was through the unions. People would pay union dues, and the unions would have political action committees, and they'd give money to politicians. Well, starting in 1980 with Ronald Reagan came into office and declared war on organized labor. You know, one of the first things he did was bust PATCO, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Association, the Air Traffic Controllers Union. And with Reagan's war on organized labor, We went from about 25% of America being unionized, about 25% of all workers in America in 1980 when Reagan came into office, having a union job where they had full health care, they had pensions for when they for their retirement, way beyond Social Security, you know, full pensions. They earned enough of a salary that a single employee, a single worker, could raise a family. And, of course, the general rule of thumb is that for every person who has a union job in an economy, there's another person who has an identical set of pay and benefits because the union jobs define the floor against which everybody has to compete. And as Reagan declared war on organized labor, a war that has been dramatically ratcheted up under this Bush administration now, particularly under Elaine Chao. As Reagan declared war on organized labor, and as the trade laws in the United States were changed so that manufacturing could go offshore, and manufacturing had been the traditional base for organized labor, we saw the unionized workforce in the United States drop from 25% when Reagan came into office down to now where it's about 8% of the private workforce, 11, 12, 13%, depending on whose numbers you're using, of the entire workforce, if you include the government sector, because there's a lot of federal and state employees who are union members. And so the numbers are small enough. They were small enough when Clinton was in 1992, when Clinton was going to run for office. He's looking around going, where are we going to get the money to run for president from? See, I think it's important that people understand the history of this so we don't just think of the Democratic Leadership Council and Al Fromm and these guys as evil, or Bill Clinton for that matter. You know, Clinton was looking around in the early 90s and saying the Republicans, they represent corporate America and the wealthy. And most people in America who are wealthy have their wealth either in family foundations, you know, the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, the Walton family, or they have it in the corporate form. That is, their wealth is derived from, through, handled by, you know, a corporation. And so, and the Republicans had easy access to that. I mean, they go to the pharmaceutical industry and say, hey, we need a couple hundred million bucks to run a campaign. And the pharmaceutical industry would say, cool, give us a Medicare bill where the government is going to have to pay us billions of dollars and we get to make profits and the government can't negotiate prices and we'll give you millions of dollars for your campaign. You know, we'll invest a million in you if you'll give us a billion. And this kind of sick deal has been going on with Republicans for a long, long time, so the Democrats were saying, hey, let's get in on this action. And thus came the Democratic Leadership Council with funding from Philip Morris and Texaco and Enron and Merck and, you know, that ilk. And Clinton was, to his credit, really, was able to raise enough money to run successfully for President of the United States. The problem was that once they had gotten into bed with the corporations, once the Democratic Party got into bed with these corporations, with these large corporations, they were getting enough money to run successful campaigns. But then it came time to pay the piper. And the Democratic Party could no longer represent itself, except in small pockets, you know, in Dennis Kucinich's district, in Paul Wellstone's state. There were these, you know, little pockets here and there, where individual Democrats still represented themselves as the person who was representing the working person, the average American. But the party as a whole couldn't legitimately make that claim any longer. I mean, they still used the rhetoric. And they still tried, you know, and the unions had to do business with them because there's nobody else. I mean, the Greens aren't going to be a national force next week. It's possible that the Democratic Party could implode the way the Whigs did and the Greens could take over, but it's not likely. So the Democratic Party became the party of let's talk one way and behave another way, and Americans figured this out very quickly. And while Clinton got himself reelected in 96, starting in 94, Democrats all across the country started losing elections. Big time. And this is when it really started falling apart. The Democratic Leadership Council comes into being in the early 90s. The Democratic Party starts dancing to the tune of the multinational corporations, starts supporting legislation that is in many cases, you know, they did a lot of good things, you know, Bill Clinton, particularly with regard to the environment. But when it came to things like organized labor, when it came to things that they couldn't push through or they weren't, as some people say they couldn't, I would say they weren't willing to, but however you want to say it, really go to the mats for national health care. They couldn't take on the big health the health insurance industries or the drug companies because they needed their money. Well, now Howard Dean has proven that the Democratic Party can kick this addiction and that the Democratic Leadership Council is no longer necessary and the Democratic Party can go back to its roots. And there is this battle going on with within the Democratic Party now about whether they're going to be Republican light and go down that Clinton road and stay in bed with the corporations, or whether they're going to go back to what they were under Franklin Roosevelt and Jimmy Carter and the reformists even before that. And time will tell. We're going to see that. It's fascinating to watch this thing played out. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This year, give a Christmas gift of inner peace, mental health, and transformation in the form of a fun, beautiful game you play with your body and brain based on meditation, breathing, and biofeedback. Go to opednews.com to click on the Wild Divine banner to order the game that Yoga Journal says turns the quest for calm into entertainment. In most games, you find weapons. With Wild Divine, you connect your computer to your body and play the game with your mind, heart, and breath. So you find new abilities and awareness truly within yourself that you use to win the game and then apply in your real life. PC Magazine says Wild Divine is innovative and fun, and even better, it's very effective. And they give it 5 stars. It's shipped with both Windows and Mac software.
The Wild Divine game is a great Christmas gift that will make a real difference in a person's life. Go to opednews.com now and click on the Wild Divine banner to order it in time for Christmas. That's opednews.com. If you sell a product or service, we have listeners from coast to coast and in 97 countries who want to know about you. Reach out to our national audience with our small business advertising package. You'll pay just a fraction of what national advertising usually costs. Call now at 802-229-2288 or visit our website, tomhartman.com, and follow the links to the small business advertising package for more information. Don't miss reaching a national audience now. 802-229-2288. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
We bang the drum slowly and play the fife lowly. You know the song in my heart. In the turning of twilight, in the shadows of moonlight, you can show me a new place to start.
And welcome back, and happy holidays. It's the 17th of December. 547 days since treason was committed in the White House, and George Bush said...
I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Nope, no idea whatsoever who might have committed treason inside the White House. The question in my mind is, why is Bob Novak still walking around loose? But that's a whole other topic. If you go to TomHartman.com and click on the message board, it'll take you to a place where you'll find some, I think there's probably over 50,000 messages on there right now, and some fascinating discussions, interesting folks, and a wide range of diverse opinions. We have libertarians, conservatives, liberals, progressives, centrists, Democrats, Republicans, the whole bunch, and occasionally some really... Not even occasionally. Every day there's something on there that I find really fascinating. And people, you know, if you just ask a question, people find the resources. TheyRule.net, by the way, is one of the great resources that I discovered through the folks on our message board. Somebody turned me onto it. It was a year or so ago because I wrote about it in Unequal Protection. But anyhow, here's a note that was posted. Tom, what I was trying to get to today discussing the stock market mechanisms is that eventually the money ends up in U.S. treasuries. And this is in the context of if we're going to privatize Social Security and then the privatized money, you know, where does that go? The stock market is, anyhow, she says the money ends up in U.S. treasuries. In order for there to be treasuries to invest in, there has to be debt to issue them. So if you were wondering why the current administration seems to want to increase the debt, it's that the very wealthy need it to sock their dollars away. I remember talking with some very rich people during the Clinton administration, and they were upset that the U.S. debt was decreasing. In fact, one went so far as to say that the World Bank would be in serious trouble if the debt were paid off. The cons, the very rich, and the trade-positive countries need us to be in debt so that they can buy our debt. The more money goes into these non-productive people and organizations, the more there needs to be debt for them to put their money in. To me, this is very insidious. It must be deliberate. The current administration cares not whether our children's futures are bankrupt as long as their greedy friends are served. Thanks for your forum for intelligence and understanding, Marion. And, you know, there is some truth to that, and I actually started to write a reply, and then I thought, I'll just reply to this on the air. It's not only easier, but also I can be a little more verbose about it and nail it down a little more tightly, I think. There is no shortage of debt, and as long as people want to invest in debt, if people are looking for safe places to put their money, we don't have to run up a huge debt in order for wealthy people to be able to invest in debt. If the United States, first of all, if there becomes a shortage of debt, what happens is that the value of debt goes up. And that's a whole other thing, a whole other lesson in how the secondary treasuries market works. But in any case, there's always debt out there. And, you know, it's not just the United States government's debt. There's many of the European countries offer the equivalent of treasuries, and those are available. And then there's corporate debt and prime grade A corporate debt, top quality corporate debt
is considered generally considered a fairly safe investment, a good investment, although it's not tax, it doesn't have the tax benefits that government debt does. But I don't think that these guys are running up the debt because they want to make a debt available to their wealthy buddies to invest in. I think that they're running up the debt because it's the Grover Norquist starve the beast strategy of give lots and lots and lots and lots of tax breaks to the wealthy millionaires and billionaires, and then say, oh, gee, look at this. We have a $7 trillion debt. We're bankrupt. You know, every single man, woman, and child in America owes $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 to... well, whoever's owning the debt, right? About a third of it is foreigners. So, therefore, we can no longer subsidize housing, and we can't have Medicare, and we can't have Social Security. That's why they want to do it, to roll back the New Deal.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please hang up.
Having a hard time connecting with someone who cares? Try the Boys Town National Hotline at 1-800-448-3000. They'll be there to help you when you need it the most, 24 hours a day. They'll even pay for the call. Simply call 1-800-448-3000.
Boys Town National Hotline. How can I help?
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Retirees older than 65 got hit with a 24% hike in their monthly out-of-pocket health insurance premium payments in 2004. That's according to a new report from the Kaiser Family Foundation. Michelle Kitchman is a senior policy analyst with Kaiser.
Many of these changes involve increasing retiree contributions to premiums, increasing retiree co-insurance or co-payments. That's what they pay for their health care services. The good news is that we did find that few employers said that they were terminating subsidized health benefits for current retirees.
Most employers surveyed said they plan to continue prescription drug benefits for retirees after the Medicare drug benefit starts in 2006. Kitchman says since 1988, the percentage of employers offering health insurance to retirees has dropped sharply.
We have seen a decline in the share of employers that are actually offering these benefits to retirees. The decline went from 66% of employers offering such benefits in 1988 to about 36% in 2004.
On average, retirees younger than 65 pay $187 toward their monthly insurance premiums. Retirees older than 65 pay an average of $101 per month. Kitchman says the Kaiser Foundation report shows current retirees are likely to hang on to their health insurance, but younger workers face retirement without that benefit.
The more daunting news is that some employers gave us indication that they intend to terminate benefits for future retirees. So that is, current workers today may be less assured of receiving retiree health benefits when they retire.
800 workers at a meatpacking plant in Colorado are being laid off today. The workers at the Swift & Company plant in Greeley, Colorado, are losing their jobs 11 days before a contract with ConAgra Foods expires. The plant is the largest provider of jobs in Greeley, which is located in the already struggling Weld County. Even before the layoffs were announced, United Way reported that it receives about 50 calls a day from people seeking assistance, and the county food bank can barely keep up with the demand. The plant says that some workers could be rehired within 18 months as it begins to produce new meat products.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Poverty in rural America continues to be higher than in urban areas. In 2003, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, 14.2% of people living in rural America were poor. The urban poverty percentage is 12.1%. Since poverty statistics began to be collected in the 1960s, people living in rural areas have always suffered higher poverty rates than those in our cities. During the 90s, though, poverty in the countryside declined, hitting a record low of 13.4% in 2000. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Will you come down from your ivory tower?
Yeah, Yeah, let's get right down to it. Snollygosters. This is great. Sue in our chat room is talking about snollygosters. That was a new one to me. Unless the folks in our chat room are putting me on, this is a word that was last used by Harry Truman and describes a politician who's willing to do or say anything in order to get political office. A snollygoster. Tom DeLay, you are a snollygoster. And no doubt about it. Is Al Fromm a snollygoster? Actually, he's not running for political office. He just has a good gig going as the head of the DLC. So what is a centrist position? This is the question that David Sirota raises in this debunking centrism article that ran in The Nation. What is a centrist position? Well, a centrist position, by definition, is a position that the majority of people agree with. Right? I mean, that's the center. The majority of people, if the majority of people agree with a particular position, it must be a centrist position. So, for example, 67% of people, this was in March of 2004, this is a six-month-old survey, survey done by the Washington Post, found that 67% of Americans believe the Bush administration favors large corporations over the middle class. So you could say agreeing that the Bush administration favors large corporations over the middle class is a centrist position. It's not an extremist position. It's not a left or right position. It's a centrist position because the vast majority, 67%, two-thirds, more than two-thirds of Americans believe that, agree with that. Even larger percentages, 88% of Americans don't trust corporate executives. You think politicians have a bad rap, or lawyers? 90% of Americans, 90%, just right across the board, you ask Americans, 90% want new corporate regulations and tougher enforcement of existing laws. More than half think the Bush administration is not tough enough on fighting corporate crime, notes David Sirota in this article. So let's look at a few of these issues. And Sirota does just a great job of just breaking them down here. And I'm just going to share them with you in the order that he lays them out, because it's brilliant. I've been saying this stuff for years, and it's so nice to see, you know, on the radio here and in the op-ed pieces that I write. But it's so nice to see somebody of David's caliber publishing in a publication like The Nation, which I generally have high respect for. On taxes, he says, self-described centrists like Joe Lieberman. Joe Lieberman, by the way, is big in the DLC. Yeah, the DLC, just like New Labor, Tony Blair modeled New Labor after the DLC. It's the same thing. I don't think anybody in England has yet figured out how to raise money on the Internet, how to do a Howard Dean. Although, it'll probably be coming fairly quickly the next time that next time Parliament gets dissolved. But, and so in England, you have a situation where, you know, they've got New Labour, and here we've got the New Democrats, right, the DLC. Republicans light, conservative light, Tories light. Lieberman high up in this thing. Lieberman says, a centrist position is to support George Bush's tax cuts for the rich. Now, first of all, it's a liar's position, because they weren't tax cuts. The money was still paid by the government. The government continued to operate, continued to run up debt, or continued to spend money, rather. And what we did was we borrowed an amount of money equal to the tax cuts. All of the tax cuts, all of that money that went into those tax cuts, we borrowed. And we borrowed it in the name of our children and our grandchildren. So they were not tax cuts, because that tax is going to have to be paid someday. It's going to have to be paid with interest, in fact. And you do the compound interest thing, you know, take 6-7% and stretch it out over 20, 30 years, and you're more than doubling the amount of money that you're paying. So not only could you argue, was it not a tax cut, you could argue that it was a real substantial tax increase on future generations. And just like the Reagan tax cut wasn't a tax cut, it was a tax increase on future generations. We're paying $160 billion this year in interest on the money that Ronald Reagan borrowed during the 80s to try and make the economy look good so he could get himself reelected. Very simple. Reagan, the first president to take us over the $1 trillion mark in debt, in national debt. We're now pushing $8 trillion. So anyhow, Joe Lieberman, he says, you know, no, this is a centrist position that the Democratic Party should take to agree with George Bush on cutting taxes for the rich and borrowing from our children. Come on, Joe. Give me a break. In 2004, CBS did a poll, CBS News, and they asked Americans, how have you been affected by the Bush tax cuts, so-called tax cuts? 72% of Americans said there had been either no effect to them whatsoever or that their taxes had gone up as a result of the Bush tax cuts. You say, but I thought everybody's taxes went down. Well, there is this problem. Because the tax cuts were so deep, a lot of federal aid to the states got cut back. And so the states had to raise their state taxes, their state income taxes, and communities that didn't have money had to increase their local property taxes, and in some cases sales taxes. And so the net effect was that a lot of people figured out, I mean, this isn't rocket science. Howard Dean was the first one out there to just talk about it in public. Sort of like, you know, the alcoholic family doesn't want to talk. Here it is. Talk about it in public. That there's people are paying more taxes. We're on health care. The Democratic leadership council would have you think that a centrist position is that our healthcare system as it functions right now, with health insurance companies and HMOs skimming anywhere from 10 to 34% of our total healthcare dollars off for themselves, is the way the majority of Americans like it. That's the centrist position they would want you to think. The Republicans certainly want you to believe that. So does the DLC. Nonsense. As Sirota points out, the Washington Post, in a 2003 national poll, found that almost two-thirds of Americans, quoting from David Sirota's article, found that almost two-thirds of Americans say they prefer a universal health care system that's run by the government and financed by taxpayers as opposed to the current private for-profit system, end quote. Two-thirds of Americans. The centrist position in America is to say we would like to have a health care system like every other, literally every other industrialized country in the world has, where everybody has access to health care. You know, nobody has to worry about being wiped out by getting sick. We have bankruptcies right now. There are more bankruptcy. More people are declaring bankruptcy right now in absolute numbers. As a percentage, it's lower. But in absolute numbers, there are more people declaring bankruptcy right now, personal bankruptcy, than during the Great Depression. And more than half of all of those bankruptcies are the result of people being unable to pay medical bills. And the bankruptcy laws have been changed so dramatically since Reagan came into office. There have been four rounds of significant changes in the bankruptcy laws. And in each case, what they did was they made it so that it was easier for the rich to use bankruptcy as a tool, like Donald Trump is doing right now, to use it as a business tool, and to make it harder for the average working person to declare bankruptcy and have anything left when all was said and done. And so when people declare bankruptcy now, they really and truly get wiped out. What about prescription drugs? John Breaux, Evan Bayh, these DLC senators, who David Sirota says both pocket thousands from the pharmaceutical industry. These are the guys, these are the Democrats who joined with the Republicans to say when Medicare buys drugs for people, it should not be allowed to negotiate prices the way the Pentagon does, the way the military does, the way HMOs do, the way hospitals do. No, if it's the government buying it, they have to pay full retail. Can't negotiate prices. Well, what's the centrist position? This is not the centrist position. I'm sorry. This is the DLC in bed with big corporations, sucking up to big corporate money, being wholly owned subsidiaries of anti-democratic corporate power structures in the United States that are corrupting politics. They're corrupting people like Evan Bayh and John Breaux and Joe Lieberman. You want to know what the centrist position is? A March 2004 Associated Press poll asked, would you like it to be easier for people to buy prescription drugs from Canada or other countries at lower costs? Two-thirds of Americans said yes. Now, you know, let's just take it a step beyond that and say, would you like to be able to buy drugs in the United States at a lower cost? I mean, those Canadian drugs are made here. Of course. This is clearly the centrist position. The extremists are the ones who are promoting this so-called Medicare reform. Energy policy. Energy policy. Should we have higher fuel efficiency in our cars? Most Americans look at this and they go, you know, higher fuel efficiency. You know, that would mean that we don't have to suck up to the Saudis anymore because we're not addicted to their oil. We don't have to worry about what's going on in the Middle East. We don't have to have a footprint in Iraq if we had more fuel efficient cars. About half of all the oil that comes into the United States is burned in our automobiles. Why don't we simply tell the auto companies, you know, the CAFE standards are going up. You've got to make more fuel-efficient cars. You can do it. No, this isn't rocket science. It's done in a lot of other countries. It's very straightforward. It's whiterose.org, Ira. And White Rose Society, where you'll find our archives. This is not rocket science. To say, let's have greater fuel efficiency. Or let's do away with the $100,000 tax deduction that you can get if you buy a Hummer. But you can only get a $2,000 or $3,000 tax deduction if you own a small business, which literally millions of Americans do. You can only get a $2,000 or $3,000 tax deduction if you buy a car that weighs less than 6,000 pounds. But if you buy a car that weighs more than 6,000 pounds, then it's not considered a car anymore. It's considered equipment, and you can write off up to $100,000 in 1 year. And Hummers, by coincidence, weigh more than 6,000 pounds. Why don't we just close that loophole so that SUVs and Hummers don't qualify for a huge tax break? And then we might not need to have soldiers dying in Iraq to protect our oil supply any longer. Well, when Consumers Union asked consumers in America, what do you think? Do you think we should have higher? Do you think the government should mandate higher fuel efficiency in cars? 81% of Americans said yes. A poll in Michigan found three-quarters of Michigan voters supported it, including 84% of the state's auto workers, the people who are making the cars. Surprise, surprise. So the extremist policy that we should have higher fuel efficiency is supported by 81 to 84% of Americans? Free trade. So-called free trade. The Democratic Leadership Council would say the Democratic Party, in order to be in the middle, in order to be centrist, must be in favor of free trade. Well, that would cause you to think that the majority of Americans are in favor of free trade, in favor of things like NAFTA and the World Trade Organization and GATT and, you know, letting more and more of our jobs go overseas. Turns out, only 24% of Americans say they want to continue the NAFTA agreement. Only 24%. Nonetheless, you got Al Fromm and you got the DLC out there going, oh, no, these are centrist positions. This is nonsense. The true centrist positions are the very rational, very rational. Let's wean ourselves off the dependence on foreign oil. Let's increase our CAFE standards, our auto fleet standards. Let's provide Americans with a national health care program that makes sense and that doesn't allow big corporations to skim money off the top. Let's solidify Social Security in a coherent way. Let's just do it. Democrats should. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Sometimes called the Supreme Court of Labor Relations, the National Labor Relations Board has recently made some decisions favoring employers over employees. Rebecca Miles has more.
One agency that's been chipping away at rules concerning workers' rights is the National Labor Relations Board, a board that was created in 1935 to administer the National Labor Relations Act. The act gave workers the right to form unions freely, without being fired or harassed or intimidated, and provided a legal process to those wanting to form unions and get certification. However, the board only adjudicates on cases, and it has been unwilling to enforce rules or inflict penalties when abuses occur. One in three campaigns to form unions usually fail because union organizers are fired even though this is against the law.
What's happened is that the law and the board have become means which employers use to prevent unions from being able to organize.
I asked David Bacon, a labor historian and former labor union organizer, if the National Labor Relations Board was necessary if it lacked teeth.
The board this last year made two important decisions, for instance, which actually took away rights. One of them was the right to have a witness. If your employer is going to fire you or write you up, in the past, you had the right as a worker, even in a place where there was no union, you had the right to call upon one of your fellow workers to go into any meetings with your boss. And a second one is that the board is now considering a decision that says that employers cannot voluntarily recognize unions, that they must go through, that unions must go through this election process, which has gotten so skewed and so out of balance.
For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
Quiet will be singing, silent night, those Christmas carols by candlelight.
There you go. Happy, it's the tail end of Hanukkah right now, I believe, and Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa. New Year's coming up. Happy Saturnalia, I think it is. What other holidays are there? But I think we can all collectively also agree. Merry Christmas. A wonderful time of year. I would like to salute a conservative Bush-appointed judge, U.S. District Judge John Bates. District Judge John Bates. This case came before John Bates where the United States government, at the behest of Alberto Gonzalez, not specifically, but the judge said, and I quote, "There is at least some circumstantial evidence that Abu Ali has been tortured during interrogations with the knowledge of the United States." And so he ruled in this case that the government cannot legally grab you or me and send us to Saudi Arabia to be tortured simply because they think that maybe by being tortured they'll get better information out of us than not by being tortured. As Georgetown University law professor David Cole wrote, U.S. officials should not be free to avoid the limits of the law simply by making side arrangements with foreign governments to lock up people at our behest. And U.S. District Judge John Bates agreed. So I say, good on you, Judge. Slowly, but surely, we will take back democracy in the United States. Thanks to Louise for producing our program this week. Thanks to Ira Gravatt for engineering it. To Brad Walrod for our music. To Shelby for streaming us around the planet on RadioPower.org. To Ben Birch for putting us up on the archives of White Rose Society. And to Jay for our music, to the folks in our chat room for showing up, and to you for listening. Have a great weekend. See you Monday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people...